Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the February 21st, 2017 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Hineni.
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler has asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
We have quorum. A few housekeeping details. If you have electronic devices, we're going to ask that you please silence them, cell phones, et cetera. There are two exits from this room, emergency exits. One is to my right at the back of the room. The other is to my left at the front of the room. In case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We're having, and I want to apologize in advance, but we're going to have to do a little reordering of business tonight. We are going to need to do an executive session at the very beginning of the meeting. And we're not going to ask people to leave the room. We are going to remove ourselves and go to a conference room downstairs. Hopefully it'll be short. The purpose of the executive session will be to receive advice from our county attorney. We will come back up, and we will proceed right into privilege of the floor for each of you who wishes to speak to us for up to 3 minutes. Meanwhile, if anybody hasn't signed one of the blue cards at the back of the room, which has our rules on it, please do so and pass it up to the front of the room so that you can have your opportunity to speak. I'm going to ask for an executive session. Can I have a motion, please, by Anna Kellis, seconded by Glenn Morey. And again, the purposes of the executive session is to go into conference with our attorney to seek legal advice. All in favor of the executive session, please raise your hand. All those opposed? All right, so we will, as I said, you folks don't have to move out there in the audience. Please give us a few minutes, and we're going to go downstairs. I'd like our county administrator and our deputy county administrator to be with us, also our director of finance. I need a motion to go out of executive session by Rich John, seconded by Will Burbank. All in favor of going out of executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. We're now going to proceed to privilege of the floor for the public. This is your opportunity to speak to the legislature on any topic that you want to for up to 3 minutes. We have a countdown clock to my left. At the end of the 3 minutes, there will be an audible ring. We ask that if you are still talking that you will please conclude. By signing the blue card and asking to speak at our meeting, you're agreeing to our rules. You agree to a 3-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So we'll still take more blue cards if you want to pass them up. But we'll start. I'll read the person who is to speak, and also I'll give you the name of the next person. When you come to the microphone, we have microphones on both sides of the room in the back. please tell us what municipality you come from and your name. We're going to start. Our first speaker is Bruce Babcock. And the one after that will be Sarah Schatzen.
Okay. Get close enough without grabbing it. My name is Bruce Babcock, and I live in the town of Ulysses. And to give a brief history of myself is in 1979 I had an accident. A year later, I lost custody of my kids, and in 1985 I had an incident where I was abused by the Ithaca police, and that was settled with me saying the truth on the day of the challenge incident. But before that, I got custody of my kids. In 1997, I was abused again by the police, and Judge Judy Rossiter was a witness to it, and I was forced to expose myself in a police station and urinate on the floor. And incidences since then, many of them. In 2012, I was accused, me and my dog, of scratching an elderly woman, and the charges were he charged her. And that case, I gave the testimony and had witnesses in that case. And in that case, the judge ruled against me, even though I had witnesses that proved beyond a reasonable doubt. Why? Because a police officer, not the town attorney, was in there to prosecute, but the police officer, at the closing arguments, he changed the time of the incident. Why? To discredit the witnesses. Judge Judy Rossiter handled the case, and she overturned it and said I didn't get a fair trial. But when I filed the appeal, I got no assistance from the town of Ulysses. The week I filed the appeal, that weekend, October 11th, somebody set fire to my house. In 2012, I battled that for years. And then, 2 years ago, the village of Trumansburg hired a new code officer that works for the neighborhood housing. And he instantly focused on my house and sent papers out without in a form that I could read, which is ADA violations, and said that my house is going to be condemned if I don't fix it. The same time the county came out and did an assessment of my house, here I'm getting my house being condemned, and the county is saying they're increasing the value of my house by 25%. In all cases, and over the years, and I specified this, is that you people do not file any paperwork in a form that I can read. And I was going to prove it today. I don't have any eyes. Plastic. I was going to take them out, but I don't want to insult or upset other people. You people do not file the ADA laws at all. In here is an envelope. You want me to pay late taxes on taxes, and I don't get anything in a form that I can read. There was an agreement. The former director of assessment, Valeria Coggin, Mary Mills, they said, and because they didn't like the heated emails, and I'm sure you know it, Mike and Dennis, is that you know that I get very hot under the collar. But she agreed to me, and she talked with every department head to get things in a form I could read. They would send me emails and call me. Since she left and retired, none of that. And now I've got a tax bill that has been rejected because I don't pay the late fees. And I've told you people, you don't follow the ADA rules, but here tonight, you want to protect people that don't even live here. But you can't even protect the person that's lived here all his life. And that's my closing.
Thank you, Mr. Babcock. May I have Sarah Schatzen, please, then Ella Diaz.
Does this work?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I live in the city of Ithaca, and my name is Sarah Schatzen. I'm really glad that the legislature is considering Resolution 6859 tonight. I think the timing couldn't be better. It's with all the directives that have been coming out of Washington lately, it's all the more important to clarify what the responsibilities and the roles of local government, including law enforcement, are. And their responsibility is to protect and serve local citizens. But before I get into that, I just want to say that, once again, we're being told to be afraid, to be fearful, and that there are, swarms of illegal aliens out there looking to commit mayhem. And so we need the most drastic and severe measures to protect ourselves. And I can't say that I'm an immigration expert, but I do a lot of reading, and I have done a lot of reading on this topic, not just recently, but you know, in the past as it's flared up as well. And from what I can gather, there really doesn't seem to be evidence to support the idea that illegal immigrants are committing a disproportionate amount of crime in this country. Yes, I'm sure they have committed some crimes, as have lots of other people. I found something on the internet, probably fake news, saying that husbands actually commit more crimes than illegal immigrants, so maybe we should lock up the married men. But aside from that, sorry about that. But you have to think about, like, who are these people? You know, if they're not swarms of criminals, you know, why would anybody risk the kinds of dangerous trip that it takes to come here, especially across the Mexican border? And I think people come here for the same reasons that immigrants have come here in the past. And I think I detailed a lot of this to you in the letter that I sent. I hope you guys had a chance to read it. But if we think about Mexicans in particular, you know, what were some of the economic factors that drove immigration over the last few couple decades? And one that has been documented is the effect of the North American Trade Agreement, Free Trade Agreement, which caused some major disruptions in the Mexican agricultural sector with the influx of subsidized agricultural products from the United States. And so, if people are coming here because of economic disruption that our policies have, you know, some relation to, then it seems like maybe our immigration system should find a way to accommodate that and not make it really, really difficult and almost impossible for people to come here. I also sent you some information about what sort of disruption in our economy could happen if we round up all these immigrants who are doing jobs that basically a lot of them Americans don't want to do. I mean, how many of us want to go out into the strawberry fields and, you know, pick strawberries, you know, for 10 hours a day? It's hard, backbreaking labor, and immigrants are doing a lot of the work that Americans just really don't want to do. So I'm going to run out of time. I won't say too much more, except that I think that we really need to pass Resolution 6859 and let our local law enforcement do the job that they're supposed to do and not the job that the federal government is doing, which is not really what I think they should be doing. But anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ella Diaz and then Susan Moulter.
Thank you, county legislators, for your vote tonight, and thank you to Anna Kellis for bringing forward this crucial piece of policy that only affirms our safety and rights of law in our state and counties. There are many points I can make tonight concerning the economic impracticality and larger infrastructural problems of retooling our local law enforcement to do the work of the Fed, but others will evidence these points, as just was said, and their danger to the economic health of the state of New York. Briefly, I want to talk about us. Who we are as people, as citizens, and as Central New Yorkers, because this really isn't about illegal immigration and the human beings who are deemed illegal or undocumented as they are pushed and pulled by the United States to pick crop, cook our food, build our homes, care for our children, and all the other labors we refuse to do for the informal wages and with no real protections of law. 2 days ago, the Washington Post reported on the North Carolina Growers Association, which supplies manual labor to North Carolina farms. The association is the nation's largest user of the H-2A guest worker program, which is designed with agricultural workers in mind. And under the program's regulations, the association must submit an application to the U.S. Department of Labor, proving that it has actively recruited U.S. natives, but it finds every year that native workers will not take the jobs. Native worker willingness is basically non-existent. Every year from 1998 to 2012, at least 130,000 North Carolinians were unemployed, and of those number who are asked to be referred to the North Carolina Growers Association, it was never above 268 until 2011. Central New York is home to a lot of farms and industries that require affordable labor, and the system is not a fair one, but we benefit from cheap labor by way of affordable food and countless services, and this is an indisputable fact. How can we then turn around and deport the very people willing to do the work? Does this solve the problem? We are not being honest with ourselves as people and as Americans. We refuse to consider the forces that lead people to risk their lives and their families' lives for the sake of earning what many of us would never consider doing for income. Then we turn around and deny this truth because of an ideological position, which is really an abstraction and not based on reality, and we decide to criminalize hundreds of hardworking people misusing local law enforcement and ensuring the rise of the next American industry, which is the prison industry. I hope that you will put ideology aside at this moment, and I hope you will think about who we are as people and as citizens who believe in a moral law side by side with our Constitution and the state and local laws that we all abide by. Thank you.
If there people have written statements, they're welcome to hand them in. We have Susan Multer and then Deborah Deal.
Susan Multer, town of Ithaca. A very, very long time ago, one of my ancestors emigrated to America for freedom of religion. And the 12 generations of descendants that followed became farmers, school teachers, one weaver, two medical doctors, and seven Presbyterian ministers. The sole reason I mention this is to make the point that people today who want to come as immigrants or refugees, whether it's for freedom of religion or freedom of speech or freedom from war or freedom from famine, even though they were an ordinary citizen in their home country, meaning they didn't have a lot of wealth, they didn't have a lot of education, didn't have political power, when they come here, they become extraordinary residents or later citizens because they have an incredible desire, commitment, and courage to uproot themselves and come to a brand new place and start over. They come to make a better life for themselves and their family and to contribute to our society, meaning they learn the language, they get a job, they pay taxes, they treat other people the way they want to be treated, and most important, they value freedom, which you and I may forget to value, we who were born here, because sometimes, sadly, we take it for granted. The resolution before you gives Tompkins County a chance to not only accept immigrants and refugees, but to welcome them, to help them learn the language, find jobs, find housing, and to protect them. So that if an immigrant or refugee needs to go to a local law enforcement officer or a social service worker, either to get assistance or to get information, they will not be asked about their immigrant status, and they certainly won't have it forwarded to some federal official. So I urge you to adopt this resolution and show the rest of New York State and the administration in Washington, D.C., that Tompkins County believes in equality and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah Deal, then Cynthia Brock.
Hi, I'm Deborah Deal, town of Ithaca. And I just want to start by saying I'm strongly in support of the resolution to make this a sanctuary county. And a part of that is because it breaks my heart to see families torn apart when these immigration and customs enforcement agents are going after people indiscriminately just because they don't have legal standing to be here. They're not just going after criminals, as was originally stated. And it breaks my heart that more American citizens don't feel a common empathy with immigrants, given that unless you're a Native American, we are all direct descendants of immigrants, and welcoming immigrants into our country to pursue a better life for themselves is one of our core values. But beyond that, I think one thing that we can all agree on is that we want our communities to be safe. And right now, immigrants are just as likely to be a victim of crime or to witness or have information about crime. And if they're afraid to contact law enforcement officers or go scattering when they see officers coming to a scene of a crime that they just witnessed, it's going to grossly impede the ability of those officers to do their job, which is to remove from society the people who actually are dangerous. Because it's not the immigrants who are bringing crime into this country. All of the fear that immigrants are bringing crime here is just that. It's fear and it's not fact-based. There is a wide body of research with, among several different independent researchers, completely nonpartisan researchers, who have found that immigrants are actually, as a group, less likely to commit crimes than us U.S. foreign citizens are. So not only are they not bringing crime, they could be helping law enforcement to solve crimes and to make our communities safer. But that's only going to happen if we have a culture where everyone feels safe interacting with law enforcement. And that's only going to happen if we create a sanctuary community where everyone feels welcome. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Cynthia Brock, then Ann Corman. Cynthia Brock from the city of Ithaca. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm speaking on my own behalf, but as a member of Common Council, I do understand that in sitting on your side of the table, you tend to think of three things: principles, laws, and budgets. I originally brought the resolution to the city under the principle that all individuals within our municipality deserve the services and protections allowed to them and given to them under the law. Regardless of where you live in the city and where you live in the county, Tompkins County intends to be an inclusive community, regardless of your religion, your sex, your gender identity, your age, your domestic victim status, and your immigration status. With regards to the law, your immigration status is fluid. There is no off and on switch. If you are someone seeking asylum, if you are a refugee, if you're seeking to become a legal immigrant, your process is a long and complicated journey. While you are here, individuals under federal law are not prohibited from working. It is not a violation of federal law to be employed while undocumented. There is nothing within the regulations that you are adopting or hopefully will adopt today that compromises your position with regards to state or federal law. What this does do is it does send a clear message to the community that all individuals will get the protections and services of Tompkins County. And what that will do will allow you to be more efficient in administering these responsibilities. When there are disenfranchised communities, when there are fearful communities, when there are people who are afraid to come forward and bear witness, when there are people who are afraid to interact with each other, they become victims of violence, of abuse, and exploitation. They become silent. When we have those populations, it makes it harder for you as a government to provide services to them, to protect those around them. And if you are unable to do that, it will be more expensive and less efficient and more costly and have a negative effect on our community at large. Please adopt these policies tonight. Please extend our definition of a safe and inclusive community to all, regardless of immigration status. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Corman, then Charles Geisler.
Hi, Ann Corman from Town of Ulysses, and I want to read something that I wrote last week, and I adapted this from a speech by Martin Niemöller. He was a Protestant pastor or Protestant minister during the Nazi regime, and he wound up spending 7 years in concentration camps. First, they came for the climate scientists, and I did not speak out because I was not a climate scientist. Then they came for affordable health care, and I did not speak out because I had health care through my employer. Then they didn't mention the 6 million Jews killed during the Holocaust, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. A few hours later, they banned the Muslims, and I did not speak out because I was not a Muslim. Then they came to pollute sacred Indian lands, and I did not speak out because I was not an Indian. Then they came to dismantle our public schools, and I did not speak out because I was not a parent. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Charles Geisler, please. Then Kevin Kelly.
Good evening. Charles Geisler, Town of Dryden. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. I'm going to read my comments. I'm in favor, strongly in favor, of the resolution that others have spoken to for three reasons. The first of which, the resolution, I hope you've all had a chance to read it and digest it, is carefully conceived, and it's a way to protect vulnerable citizens across Tompkins County. It incorporates guidance from the chief law enforcement officer of our state with model language consistent with current law enforcement. It mirrors sanctuary principles without invoking the sometimes contested language of sanctuary. To the drafters, thank you very much for the work you've put into it. Second, the resolution codifies and establishes best practices regarding the role of local government in New York in ensuring public safety for all. That'd be great. Thanks. It establishes that unauthorized migrants among us are not prey. They are humans with inalienable rights. Thirdly, and for me most importantly, because it's an area that I've spent quite a bit of my career studying, the resolution mirrors the prerogatives of our strong state home rule. That is, self-government as established in Article 9 of our Constitution in New York State and by law very liberally constituted. These provisions go beyond the home rule powers of many other states in the United States and take back more than and reach back more than a century, actually into the 19th century. At times like this, we actually are exceedingly fortunate to have local control with strong legal teeth. And this resolution, the one before us, says the following. Tompkins County has the authority to adopt local laws relating to government, protection, order, conduct, safety, health, and the well-being of persons. Strong home rule means we can extend hospitality without fear of reprisal. This is not an imagined community we're talking about. It's the law. Please pass this solid and sensible resolution. As a New York State county, one that many look to, let's do the heavy lifting along with college presidents, business leaders, major churches, and the press, and others standing against counterproductive federal measures done in our name. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Kevin Kelly, then Ellen Walsh.
I'm Kevin Kelly of Ithaca, and I'm board president for Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources of Tompkins County, also known as OAR, which has been providing services to people who are charged with crimes and inmates at the Tompkins County Jail, and their families recover from the collateral consequences of being arrested and charged for over 40 years now. And I'm here to speak in support of our Endeavor House project. And the goal there is for us to provide residents to four to five of our clients, and it's an important project that I realize when I first came to Ithaca as a criminal defense attorney. I had a client who spent the night on a bench outside Wegmans, And he contacted me. He was happy to be out of jail, but he didn't have a place to go because he had some kind of sanction out of the Department of Social Services. I contacted OAR from a referral, and one of their very competent caseworkers within a few hours got housing for my client. And I was so impressed that I joined the board. And what I've learned over the years, though, is that there's a lot of our clients have similar or worse circumstances when it comes to their housing. And, you know, we've been doing reentry for 40 years, and what we know is that it's hard to get a start. How do you turn your life around after being incarcerated, after being charged with an offense? How do you turn your life around when you don't have a home base to go to? So reentry really does start with housing, and we have an opportunity right now to purchase a house on the West End, and myself and the other two attorneys on the board expect some legal issues, and we expect the legislature to have questions for us. And I'd like to take this time to introduce Cornell Law School. We've got the instructor, Amy Emerson, of the Legal Research Clinic at Cornell Law School, and two of the students, Christine Jordan and Carrie Montgomery, if you could just stand for us. They're going to be helping us out with legal issues that concern the board and also the legislature. So thank you.
Welcome to the folks that were introduced. We appreciate it. We have Ellen Walsh. Then we have Walla Haran. Please remember to state your municipality.
Hi, my name is Ellen Walsh, and my municipality is Danby. So I have in my hand here actually a little frequently asked questions about the legality of sanctuary resolutions as regard to the way federal law relates to state law. As a lay person, I found this extremely helpful, and I'm sure that you all are very well aware of most of this. But something that I wanted to bring up, because I haven't heard it discussed yet, is the fact that we are protected in making this resolution by the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. I feel that that point can be overstated in light of the fact that so I attended Congressman Reed's town halls this weekend, and it became abundantly clear to me that despite the best efforts of a lot of people in this country, the Affordable Care Act is going to be repealed. And we discussed previously that's going to drastically increase the tax burden of people in this county. I feel that it can't be overstated that we shouldn't be forced to use our county funding to enforce federal regulations, because we're going to need it. We're going to need it to subsidize the health care of the people in this county. We're going to need it to take care of our school districts in this county, since Betsy DeVos received that nomination, so that's going to be a disaster. There are so many other places that this funding needs to be allocated. We shouldn't be forced to enforce federal immigration law. The other point that I really wanted to bring up is the economic impact that this is going to have on our community. We are an agricultural community. We employ a lot of people who may or may not be documented, and they do hard jobs that most people don't want to do. I don't know about you, but I do not want to be up at 3 a.m. milking cows. But they do it. They do it because they need the jobs, and they do it willingly. And I fail to understand why we would not protect these people that do these jobs that nobody else really wants to do. You know, I mean, the work that they do for us so that we can have a sustainable food system is backbreaking stuff. And we've already seen the results of what happens when we deport people who are willing to do these jobs in Alabama and in North Carolina. And we've further seen that American workers are not willing to step up to the task. So in conclusion, I would like to ask that you consider these points when you are voting on this resolution. I think it's very important to the health of our community that we pass this. Thank you.
Thank you. Walla Haran, then Kate Shanks.
Hi, my name is Walla Haran. I live in the town of Lansing, and I'm here asking you to vote for this resolution. I'd like to start out saying that I'm a naturalized citizen, and there, a few years ago, I was driving with my husband, and we got pulled over, And we weren't sure why. And the officer that pulled us over asked my husband for his license and registration, turned to me and said, "I also want your license or your ID." When he asked my husband for his ID, he said, "Do you have any outstanding tickets or warrants?" Then my husband said no, and he turned to me and he asked if I was wanted by anybody and what was my status here. And I'm a citizen of this country. These are the kinds of things that make me now afraid to call the police if I need anything. When I was in a car accident, I called my husband and had him come down, because he's white and American, so then we can call the police. These are the kinds of things that make us afraid, even though I am 100% legally documented here. When you pass a resolution like this, it protects people like me, and it protects people that have concerns that they need to bring to law enforcement to make sure that they don't need to have somebody standing beside them that looks white so that they don't get questions about their status. These raids that we've seen happen throughout the country, they're picking up people without asking them what their statuses are and sorting it out later. The impact that that does on our system is unbelievable, because you're pulling parents away from their children. So these children end up in foster care if they don't have somebody else to take care of them at home. You're putting people that are relying on these employees potentially out of business. We see this in the agriculture district, where you're seeing, you know, fruits and vegetables are just rotting on the vines. These are the kinds of things that you guys have to consider when you're voting on this. These are the kinds of impact. Yes, the economical impact of it is important. The budgetary impact is important. We already in Lansing have a really high property tax. To increase it would be unfair, because this is a federal mandate. These are a federal law that they should be budgeting for. It should not fall on us, especially when we as citizens do already fear, and this would just make it much more scary for us to have to not be able to rely on our law enforcement when it's something as basic as, I'm in a car accident and my first call is not 911. It's to somebody to make sure that I'm safe in case I need to call 911. So these are the kinds of things I implore you to please think about when you're thinking about these things and passing these resolutions, because I am a citizen, and I'm a citizen of this country and this community, and I pay my taxes and I work here. And I'm part of this community, and the law enforcement that's here should be protecting me just as much as they should be following the orders of somebody who's not really interested in my well-being. Thank you.
Thank you. Kate Shanks and then Randy Brown.
Hello. My name is Kate Shanks. I live in the village of Lansing. I'm here to voice my support for the proposed resolution to maintain a safe, inclusive government for all persons in Tompkins County. I've never spoken in front of the legislature before, but I felt it was important to do so tonight. I support this resolution not only as the right thing to do and as the compassionate thing to do, but also because, from what I've read and understand, the evidence shows us that policies like the ones codified here make communities safer for all residents. To me, the key part of this resolution is the provision, as many people have spoken about, that county employees and law enforcement will not ask about immigration status in cases where it's not relevant. And there's evidence from around the country that shows us that when law enforcement follows these best practices, the communities they serve are safer, because people are able to report crimes, they're able to act as witnesses, provide information during investigations, and importantly, as we've heard, to seek help for themselves without fear of being questioned about their immigration status and without fear of being detained or deported. That's not a fear that anybody should have to live with, and additionally, it's not a burden that local law enforcement should have to deal with as they try to serve our community and keep us all safe. I also understand that a great deal of effort went into crafting this resolution in a way that it's consistent with the Constitution and it's consistent with guidance from our state's Attorney General. I greatly appreciate that effort, and I urge all members of the legislature to vote to adopt this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Randy Brown and then Kathleen Bergen.
Hello. Thank you for this moment. My name is Randy Brown. I'm a resident of Newfield. I have lived in Tompkins County most of my life. My family's been here for six generations. I'm here today because I think the county legislator is distracted from their job. Like many people in America, I'm not happy with our federal state government actions and inactions. Many elected officials are truly the privileged class, and they have us hoodwinked. I've been a registered independent for 25 years because blindly accepting and voting Republican or Democrat, every election has created politicians that easily manipulate our populace. They tell us our policies and actions will fix things, and not much is farther from the truth. Politicians toss blame and accusations to deflect attention from them. That is how they play the shell game that divides us. They preach acceptance and compassion, but cast aspersions at anyone that disagrees with the views. Unfortunately, too many people also take this route. There are many examples of corruption in New York State that the time allotted does not allow me to detail. But the standard response from politicians is always the same. I had no idea. We gave the politicians freedom to give away tens of millions of dollars and are shocked when corruption occurs. Democrats rally to Democrats, Republicans around Republicans. Nothing truly changes for the average citizen. The gravy train continues and is based on who you donated to. Now to my main reason for being here and for letting me vent. I mentioned early on that Tompkins County legislators are distracted from the true job. The Sanctuary County Ash is only the latest example. This is not the county's business as it does not help existing legal residents with the taxpaying public. If anything, put on the ballot and let it be decided there. It may comfort and provide satisfaction with individual activists, and I get it. Many of us are frustrated and understand that something has to change. The world has an ugliness to it, and it's easy to feel helpless. Unfortunately, war seems to be everywhere, and I pray someday it will end. But that is not the county legislature's role. Your role is to serve the people of this county, and by doing that, you can set an example for other communities. We must proactively focus on our local communities and provide opportunities and hopes here is the primary focus. In this chamber today are people that want to help solve problems and make life-changing contributions. Look here in this county. Poverty and inequities exist here in every town, city, and village. We must focus. Discussing world issues takes away energy and time from the legislature's true responsibilities. Poverty does not care about color or gender. Those people living in poverty too often have limited good opportunities, and that is the true inequity. Hopes and dreams can be diminished at a very young age, and we can't blame big politicians or expect their policies or rhetoric to change that. It's our responsibility. I live in Newfield. I'm trying to help. If you want ideas on where to start, I'm always available. Thanks.
Thank you. Kathleen Bergen and then Liz Brundage.
Thank you. I'm Kathleen Bergen, and I'm from Ithaca. I was a tenured professor of constitutional law for nearly 10 years. I'm now with Catholic Charities Refugee Resettlement Program, and I offer that by way of background, though I'm speaking here on my personal capacity. I wanted to make clear what this resolution is about. It is about affirming existing policy. Tompkins County officers do not enforce immigration law. They do not have the jurisdiction to enforce immigration law, and we've been told by the county sheriff's office that they have no intent or interest, nor do they have the resources to enforce immigration law. In fact, they are on the right side of the law because immigration is a federal matter controlled by Articles 1 and 2 of the Constitution. It is specifically prohibited from state enforcement under the 10th Amendment. So good job for the speaker who referenced that. What this resolution does is maintain current practice. It does not change current practice. How does it affect undocumented individuals in our community? The same way it affects all of us. They can still be investigated, charged, prosecuted, and convicted for convicting a crime the same way anybody else could. Nobody gets a pass. The only thing this resolution does is confirm that when it comes to immigration laws, the federal government should be the entity enforcing them, not the state or local government. There have been questions asked about whether or not local officers should be cooperating with federal officers when it comes to immigration. Let me tell you how that happens under this resolution. First, if our local officers are asked whether or not they know the citizenship or immigration status of someone in their custody, they're required to give that information to federal officers. Second, if federal agents come to a local officer and ask that the individual they already have in custody should be detained for an additional period of time while they investigate that person's immigration status, local officers can detain that person for an extended period so long as federal agents present a judicial warrant. There are circumstances under which local officers can detain someone on the federal agent's request without a warrant. That is when somebody is suspected of engaging in criminal terrorist activity, or they have been convicted of a violent crime. Let me tell you why this resolution is important for preserving local resources. Because if local officers detain an individual for suspected immigration activity on behalf of an ICE agent without a warrant, then it's possible that there is no probable cause. That means our officers have committed a constitutional violation and they open themselves and the county up to a civil rights lawsuit. We don't want to put them in that situation. In addition, any amount of time or any resources that local officers use that is spent on immigration enforcement is time, money, and resources taken away from local criminal justice activity. That money does not get reimbursed from the federal government. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz Brundage, then Youngmin Yee. Liz Brundage. All right, let's go ahead with Youngmin Yee then, please.
Oops. Hello, thank you. My name is Youngmin Yee, and I'm a resident of Ithaca. I also happen to be a PhD candidate in sociology and policy analysis, and actually two of my areas of research are criminal justice and immigration systems in the United States. I really appreciate this opportunity to provide comment. My first comment is regarding, I believe it's Resolution 6865 for the one-time appropriation to expand reentry services. I believe someone spoke about that earlier. I'd like to comment that I'd support strongly this appropriation because reentry is so important as a future investment in prior inmates' ability and capacity to become fully self-sufficient economically and become contributing members of the community once again. Without such services, these individuals end up having to rely on public services for longer than they would otherwise. And I think the appropriation could be considered an investment in future economic security for these individuals and the individuals to whom they are linked. The second point I'd like to speak on is Resolution 6859, on which we've heard a lot of comment already. And I'll try not to repeat other people's points too much, but I just want to focus my comments on two key points. The first is that I believe that based on my understanding of the research and the research I've done, the resolution will actually protect our communities and enhance the capacity of local government and local law enforcement, their capacity to protect members of the community. Some people have commented on the fear of law enforcement as a potential chilling effect that has serious consequences for the safety of both documented and undocumented immigrants and citizens in the United States communities. And I think that protecting allowing law enforcement agencies locally not to have to speak on the undocumented status issues without other criminal justice issues at hand will allow us to better protect our communities. Second, I want to talk a little bit about the children and the families who are linked to potentially undocumented immigrants who, regardless of their own undocumented or immigrant status, will be put at risk by forcibly being separated from their families. This has long-term consequences for the children's development. This has been shown in empirical research and is supported by fact. And we condemn these children and these families and communities to later life criminality, lower educational attainment, and lower economic security and efficacy if we put their family stability at risk. Thank you.
Thank you. Have Barbara Pence, then David Rhodes. If I got that right, is it Pence, P-E-N-C-E, or is it Peace? Sorry. Please speak.
Hello. I'm Barbara Pease, and I'm from the town of Ithaca, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the resolution for sanctuary. I have immigrants in my family, and it's easy for me to understand what would happen to the family if some of them were grabbed and deported. Fortunately, they're all documented. But it's easy for me to put myself in other people's shoes. People's circumstances are so complex, and I'd rather err on the side of mercy than just a cold execution of federal law. And apparently, it would be a bit of federal overreach for the federal government to try to require the sheriff's department to do the arrests. But I'd like to see the county stand by its principles and stand by mercy. I guess those are my thoughts on it. I'll see you later. Bye.
Thank you. David Rhodes. Please remind us of your municipality, please.
David Rhodes, and I live in the city of Ithaca. And I used to work as a case manager and interpreter for a health clinic. It was called Finger Lakes Migrant Health. It was a health clinic for migrant farm workers in this area. And, you know, I could talk a lot about stories I've heard about people, like the kind of dangers faced in coming to this country, working insane hours, sending money home, trying to support families. And I can talk a lot has been said about the need to have local law enforcement not be required to do the work of ICE and federal immigration officers. But what I really want to highlight is that what we're talking about here is a human rights issue. Right? We're not talking about whether or not people should be or shouldn't be allowed to stay. That's a separate issue. We're talking about a human rights issue. And just to paint a picture, as a case manager, I would have people sometimes call and be in the middle of, let's say, an asthma attack. Literally, I'm thinking about this memory right now, and saying, I'm not going to call 911. Just be like, you're not really able to breathe. I can hear that you're not able to breathe. You need to get help. And I'm not going to call 911. Thinking about the potential consequences, will I be able to support my family? All these other questions coming to mind beyond, I might die. You know, the same sort of question came up, in this time a separate instance, but an infant in what turned out to be a life and death situation. And the family is weighing the consequences. Do we call 911? Do we go to the hospital? Do we try to get emergency services? Right? And in those situations, we're talking about fundamental, basic human rights, right? The whole question about whether or not people should be given what kind of path to citizenship or what the role of the ICE officials should be, that's not even on the table. That's not even what we're really discussing here. We're talking about access to things like fundamental rights to health care. We talk about workers' rights, things that we think about in much more global human terms. And if we really focus on those sorts of questions and we think about, okay, how do we want to make sure that people whose lives are in danger feel like they can call 911, they can get access to those very basic services that we would say anybody should access, any parent with a child should be able to access for their child, should access for themselves without fear of the consequences. That is what's on the table tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I have 3 cards left. It's not too late. If there's someone out there who wants to speak and hasn't sent up a card, please fill one out and send it forward. We'll proceed. I have Enrique Gonzalez Cantal. Did I say it properly?
Hola. Señores legisladores, vengo aquí en apoyo a la resolución 6859. Gracias al representante Kellis por traer la resolución ante el voto de los legisladores. Yo soy Enrique González Conti, soy profesor de Ithaca College de Español y enseño a mis estudiantes a conocer otras culturas. Lo que está pasando en Estados Unidos hoy lamentablemente va en contra de lo que yo enseño en mis clases y es un ataque a mis clases, literalmente. So I'll switch to English. I'm Enrique González Conti. I'm a professor at Ithaca College. I'm from the city of Ithaca. And I'm here to support the resolution 6859. I ask you to support the resolution and pass this resolution tonight. I teach Spanish, so that's why I was speaking Spanish at the beginning. And I teach my students to learn about other cultures. Unfortunately, our current scenario and current political, the federal government is actually passing a lot of executive orders against the things that I teach in my classroom. So I'm here in support of the things that, you know, social justice, etc. And that's what I teach in my classroom. I cannot teach that and then pretend that nothing's happening outside of my classroom. So please, please pass this resolution tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. I have next Sherry Cortice and then Doa Abdel Ghani.
Hi, I'm Sherry Cortice, and I want to thank everyone you very much, and excuse the cold, but very much for this resolution, and I'm hoping that you guys pass it unanimously like they did at the Common Council level. This is very important, and I have a little story because I have a lot of family in Louisiana, Missouri, Texas, but we do a lot of road traveling, and my son and his wife were coming back from a funeral just Saturday, and in Indiana, they pulled them over. Although they weren't speeding, there were no lights out, they were perfectly fine, and the policeman officer said, well, you were following the truck too close, and I thought you might get in a wreck, so I pulled you over. And so his next question was, do you have any guns? And they were like, no, and where are you coming from, and where are you going to, and why were you there? I have no doubt in my mind that if they hadn't been two white people, if they had been immigrants or people of color or no matter who, that's why this guy did it. They had New York plates, you know, and so it's already happening. I applaud you guys again. I applaud the Common Council and all the work you guys have done, because we really, really need to protect everybody. We are all human beings. I always say this. We're all human beings. We all bleed red, and we all come from the same place, no matter what you believe. And so it's our job and our duty to take care of each other. It's our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and support one another. We have nothing to lose but our chains, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Doa Abdel Ghani. Then Michael Kaplinkalair.
I'd like to applaud you on pronouncing my name perfectly.
Well, thank you. I mess up some of them.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're having this discussion, you know, about kicking out undocumented immigrants while we are not respecting the indigenous people's lands in North Dakota. So it just puts a lot of things into perspective at this time. Today I was talking to my son about, you know, this proposal and how he felt about it. And we did a little digging and found that this is not going to work. During President Eisenhower's time period, there was a very similar immigration procedure in place called, and I apologize for using this, but it was called Operation Wetback. And basically what was going on was they were deporting anyone who did not look American. And a lot of the people who were deported were American. It didn't work then. 88 people died. And it's not going to work now. They were so overtaxed with communities trying to get rid of these people who they felt were dangerous to their communities. And they were there just doing the work that none of us were willing to do. So as we talked, he had a great point. And I said, you should come tonight and talk. And he said, no. So after a lot of nagging and a promise not to say his name, I got him to write down exactly how he felt. And the reason he decided not to come was, this is your generation's problem. You still haven't figured out how to live with others that aren't like you. And the next generation is being influenced by your failure to overcome this problem. Please, let me go home and tell my son we have not failed. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Kaplinkalair. Former county legislator, former chair of the legislature. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm here to speak on behalf of a Resolution P, which is the one regarding $100,000 to OAR, and Resolution Q, which others have spoken to. 20 years ago in this legislative, in a different legislative chambers, Cal Walker and Jim, I have Jim Walker down, but it's not Jim Walker, but the leaders of faith came to this body asking for funds for transitional housing from jail to the community. And at that time, it was not granted. But 20 years later, you have the opportunity now to approve these funds to have people make this transition successfully as opposed to having a midnight drop at the edge of the sheriff's department door. These kinds of supports are very much needed, and I really applaud that this has come about. I applaud OAR, and I hope you can support that. Regarding Resolution Q, the question I think has been addressed, but I want to address it again. Why pass a resolution affirming policies that are already in place? Well, in times of uncertainty, it's very worthwhile and indeed valuable to reaffirm prior safety and health policies for all community members so that they, law enforcement and staff and community members and immigrants themselves, don't have cause to question the county's commitment to these pre-existing legal policies. I hope you can support this resolution. I applaud that the relevant stakeholders were involved in the drafting of it, and I think that it is indeed time to reaffirm something that already is in place because of these times of uncertainty. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there someone with a blue card? Sure. Will, would you name? Would you tell us who the person is, please, when you get the card? Nancy Sparrow.
Hi, I'm Nancy Spiro. I live in the town of Enfield, and I'm just here in support of the resolution to have Tompkins County be a sanctuary county, or whatever the wording is for the title of the resolution. And I live in the town of Enfield, and I was reading some of the newspapers that came out in the past few weeks, and one person said that people in the town of Enfield hadn't been voicing their opinions on this. So I just wanted to make it clear that there are people in the town of Enfield, many people who are in support of this resolution. And it's the humanitarian thing to do. It's the good neighborly thing to do. And it's important to our economy in terms of the jobs that are being done by people who come across the borders and help with our agricultural work. And there's many, many more things I can say, but people have said them very well. Thank you.
Thank you. And the very last one I have is Peter Landley.
Peter Landley, town of Ithaca. Okay. I want to thank everyone who's crafted the resolution on inclusion. It brings to mind two or three points, one of which has been mentioned briefly, and that's the point about the UN Declaration on Human Rights. The point about that declaration is that it provides us with an entirely different framework than having to, shall we say, be hijacked at the local and regional level to militarize our economy and our society. Why is that? Human rights are the gauge of our humanity, and that's essentially what's at stake. The other point is that, in the words of probably my favorite poet, Wendell Berry, a grandfather, a farmer, a poet, he asks, at one point in our history when we had nuclear weapons pointed, you know, in the thousands of thousands against the then Soviet Union, he asks a Siberian woodsman in this poem, who has invented our enmity? Who has said that your land will be strange to me and my land will be strange to you? And then, in a very dense three lines, he puts it this way, which is probably almost the reframing of what we're hearing on the news. In the dark of the moon, in flying snow, in the dead of winter, war spreading, families dying, the world in danger, will we walk the rocky hillside sowing clover? Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I want to tell you the way we're going to proceed. Before we go to privilege of the floor for municipal officials, I want to move this resolution up so that you folks in the audience can hear whatever action this legislature decides to take on it. So I'm going to turn to Anna Kellis, who is the chair of our Health and Human Services Committee, and ask you, Anna, if you will move the resolution, which is resolution
Q.
Right on cue.
I will move it, and I can introduce it now, or I can wait until we have a second.
We have a second from Carol Chalk. Can I just add that legislator Leslyn McBean Claiborne will be returning to the meeting. She had a personal matter she had to attend to, but she's going to be coming on the way back. Go ahead. Anna, would you like to speak to this?
Yes. I wanted to first thank everyone for coming. We've had an experience over the last couple months, at least from what I've observed, where we have gone from a place of, and even I have felt this, some complacency and some resting on our elected officials to interpret and enact the laws that are in place without necessarily knowing them personally. And what I've experienced over the last couple months for myself, but also the engagement of the population here and everywhere in the country, is an engagement in our government that I have never seen before. And I just first want to start by saying that I'm profoundly proud of the depth of knowledge that has been brought here tonight by the public. And I hope that that continues for all of us. So one of the things that I wanted to preface this with is that I have called this resolution Public Safety for All. And that is the spirit of this resolution. We have the 10th Amendment, as has been brought forward by some people already, that does exactly what we understand the separation of the three branches, executive, judicial, and legislative. There is a reason that we have checks and balances. There is also a balance between federal, state, and local, home rule being in support of that. There is a real reason why that is the case. The requirements for the federal government law enforcement is to protect the country at large and the boundaries of the country at large. It's like a 30,000-foot view. The responsibility of local government in the trenches is to protect the public safety and ensure peace and well-being in the trenches on the ground. The reason that there is a separation is because the responsibilities are distinct. And to do the responsibilities of the federal government at the local level could actually go against the best interest of the community itself. And that is extremely important. So what this resolution is saying is, let's keep and acknowledge the separation so that both forms of government, both levels of government, can maximize their effectiveness. And if we try to enact federal law enforcement through our local law enforcement, we actually cripple them to do their job the most effectively as they can. And part of that is ensuring that everyone feels safe enough to come forward and engage with them when they are trying to do their investigations. So that's the root of why I put this forward. There's a reason why I didn't include the language of sanctuary in this. That word is not a legal definition. It is a political definition. And in fact, there are as many definitions of sanctuary as there are communities that recognize themselves as sanctuary. Therefore, it felt important for me, given the polarization in the community and the fact that human brains have a tendency to shut off once we think we understand a concept or a word or a phrase, to leave that word out and focus on the essence of what this is, which is to ensure public safety for all. This is a public safety for all resolution that articulates our role in maintaining peace and order and that of the federal government,
We are stating that keeping keeping a registry, bypassing due process, investigating or seeking information about immigration status when it is not directly relevant to the investigation at hand undermines the effectiveness of local law enforcement. To the extent possible under the law, we are stating that we will not dedicate local resources or personnel to do the work of federal law enforcement. So I just want to hold that as the core to this. There will be discussions of what the implications are financially, and that is under debate. But there are case laws that show that federal government cannot take steps that are coercive with respect to withholding federal funding. There is also case law that shows that any action taken by the federal government should be germane. For example, grants that are put forward, that stipulations or limitations should be germane to the content of that grant and to the welfare of the United States. These are case laws that we will all be using moving forward. I think all governments moving forward who believe in the protection of everyone's human rights to defend these actions. The one thing that we cannot say is that we are 100% or we're at zero risk for what we're doing. These are steps that we'll be taking moving forward because the concepts have not been fully defined in the federal government. So this is a moving target, and we are doing the best that we can to protect everyone in our community in Tompkins County. It does not say that people are not subject to the same laws as everyone else. If someone commits a crime, they will be held accountable to that crime. This does not require our public safety to do anything different than they are already doing, nor does it require them to go outside of existing immigration law or the Constitution, nor does it do this for departments or agencies. And that is exceptionally important. We did not step outside the bounds of anything legal. We're simply stating what already exists and best practices. So those pieces are exceptionally important to understand for all of us moving forward and to watch as our current federal government takes shape on this issue.
Anna, I just want to make sure that the motion you moved was that is revised by committee. Is that correct?
Correct.
Carol Chalk.
Thank you, Mike. I'd just like to take a minute and talk about my own family, if you don't mind.
Well, let's not go too long tonight.
I don't plan to go too long. But I think it's important to for people to understand where I'm coming from with the things I'll say after that. My mother's family, I'm Jewish. My mother's family, my grandmother came here as a two-year-old in 1905 from the area of Poland that went back and forth between Russia and Poland for religious freedom and opportunity. And she worked her way up from nothing, she and her family, hair by hair. She did electrolysis. And at 86, when she died, she was still hair by hair earning her money. My father's family came very early for the Jewish community, 1865. My great-grandfather came here as a child, escaping pogroms in that same area. I think it's why I'm blonde. I am Semitic, but we can discuss later what factors would have led to my looking the way I do. He went to work at 11 years old, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, in the garment industry for $2 a week. And he worked his way day by day. And his son, my grandfather, ended up employing hundreds of people in garment manufacturing in Pennsylvania and then lost his money, refusing to go offshore because he felt loyal to the people who had been working for him. I have other family by marriage. I have an aunt who came here as a child from Germany. They escaped first to Ecuador and then to the United States, where she married into my father's family. And at the time that she left, family, her parents, family and friends, said they were nuts. It was early into the regime, and they were being alarmist. They were a nation of laws. They were being silly. Why do you need to leave? Well, years later, they managed to bring some of those family members over here with numbers on their arms, and other family members we just don't have anymore. We're going to have some debate here tonight about whether this resolution does or does not make us a sanctuary. And I hope I'm wrong, that that's probably not going to make a whit of difference whether we think it is or not, because we're seeing the definition of that change weekly now. You know, yesterday what we do wasn't a sanctuary, but today it may be. So I'm not sure it matters whether we debate this or not, but I hope I'm wrong, because I do hope that our Constitution and our federal and state laws prevail. And I'd pass this resolution, and I'd do something stronger, you know, in any case. I'd be very proud to have us open these doors and say, people can come here, and we will not let ICE here. But that's not what we're talking about doing. Frankly, I'm a little bit disappointed that we're not. My great-grandfather's family, my father's family, is not listed at Ellis Island on that big wall, but I have visited there, and the museum there traces with big, beautiful lights, lighted maps, the waves of immigration to this country from different places in the world. And they also have maps, very interesting, where they track the annual permissions granted to visas that were being issued. And historically, it's interesting to note that the numbers rose and fell with our need for people to occupy jobs. And what is interesting now and different now is that now we somehow have laws and policies that allow money to for the establishment of businesses to move across borders, but somehow we're not allowing the labor to flow in a free market sense in the same fashion. And that's created this discrepancy and this push and pull. So it's one of the things we feel here, and it's one of the things that impacts us when we don't have enough people to harvest our grapes or work on our dairy farms here, and that's an issue that we have heard about from some of our farmers. I am glad that my great-grandfather and his family were not stopped on the street for jaywalking and sent back to Poland. I'm glad that they weren't stopped at a stop sign. They were in a city, so I don't think they had cars, but they you know, that they weren't stopped at a stop sign on the way to work and couldn't get to work and got fired. So, you know, I'm glad that they were able to stay here. And I think that, as I said, I hope that I wish that we would do more. And I hope that we achieve unanimity here. I would withdraw my second for this resolution if one of the Republicans would like to second this. I think that would be important to do. I had a phone call from a constituent just before I came here, the one, Kathy, who wanted to make sure she could listen tonight. She's a Republican. She's 86 years old. She's a Republican. She registered as a Republican when she was a child, you know, for the first time she voted. And she wanted to be able to listen. And she said, I will contact my congressman. I will contact those in the federal government, because this isn't the country that I, whose ideals I stand for. And so I hope that we'll see that unanimously here. I have one detail. I was asked by people concerned about our definition that we imply of terrorism. It's buried in the resolution, that fourth resolved. It's on your desks as chalk B. Joe, I didn't label yours because it was before I realized there was I put one in and that there was some slight wording change recommended by Jonathan. It is large letter A, small letter A, Roman numeral II, the two, and it's written in front of you. I just like to change the wording there. Instead of there is probable cause to believe that the individual has or is engaged in terrorist activity, it would be engaged in an activity of terrorism, which is an activity forbidden by law and intended to intimidate or coerce a population, influence government policy, or affect government conduct through violence.
Carol, it's moved an amendment. Is there a second for
it's
that?
Friendly for me.
It's friendly.
And it's friendly to me. But if people want to debate it, does anybody need us to vote on that minor change?
Point of information, that's the it's the third resolved in what came out of committee.
One.
I have page three, fourth resolved.
It's the third resolved.
Fourth.
That's the third resolved.
It's the third resolved. Yeah, in case that matters, but.
It does, because I was looking for the third resolved.
All right, so that, without objection, apparently that is added as friendly. There is another proposed amendment. Rich, could you move that one? It's for probation. Has asked for it.
Okay.
I think we received a copy ahead of the meeting.
Yes, and I believe there's a version. This is 6851.
No, it's this language that I think you were just handed. I'm sorry, you're the chair of the Public Safety Committee. I thought you probably should.
Mike, Anna has it.
I have it. I can move it.
Yeah. It's your resolution, Anna. I want someone else to move it.
I'd be happy to move. You want this?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would move a proposed addition to the first resolved on packet page 71, adding a Roman numeral 4. To read, disclosing information about an individual when the county department, officer, personnel, or agent is acting pursuant to a court-ordered investigation on an individual who has been convicted of a misdemeanor or felony. So I move.
Is that friendly?
It's friendly.
Is it friendly to the seconder? Carol?
Yes.
All right.
It's friendly.
So without objection, that will be part of the resolution then. Let's continue with debate. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. I am going to support this resolution, and I want to go a little different direction than I think many of my colleagues will go. Number one, Anna has done a great job working on this, pulling it together, doing all the research, and I applaud her for that. I would ask all of you who have come here this evening, if you are a student and you live somewhere else and you're here talking to us, thank you for that. But if you live somewhere else and you go back home, I would ask you to get involved. I would ask you to be that citizen that Barack Obama said when he walked away from being the president. Go back to your community, work for people that espouse your beliefs, progressive causes, because the things that are done that affect us and why we're doing this resolution are not here in Tompkins County. They're in Washington, D.C. And we live in a district, for example, and I'm getting a little political, and I'm a Democrat. We have a representative in this district who doesn't want to come to town meetings in Tompkins County. And it's actually an advantage for him to have Tompkins County being in opposition to him because it looks better in the rest of the district when you do that. So the Democratic Party's been asleep for 8 years, it's my opinion. that they've been that way. They've had Obama as the president and wasn't that great, but the poor guy couldn't get anything done for the last 6 years of his administration because someone said when he got in, he's going to be a one-term president, and that's our goal. Well, he was a two-term president, but he had a hard time getting it done toward the end of the time. Couldn't get a Supreme Court nominee even voted on 11 months from the end of his term. So what I'm asking is, when you go back home, get involved, be a citizen, work for people that can do the things you want done and what the country needs done and what the citizens need done that we're talking about in this resolution. So thank you for listening, and I am gladly going to support this.
Rich John, then Anna Kellis.
Thank you, Mike. I wanted to comment on a couple of the comments the public made. One, the gentleman in the corner who raised a very important question, is this within our boundaries? Should we be talking about this? And that's always a good question for a legislature to ask. And this is certainly not in the normal course for us. But I would also echo, Jim, your comments. Anna, thank you for all the work you put in on this. But it is a good question that we should consider. And I'd then mention our colleague from the city, Cynthia, thank you for coming, and talking about, well, there's principle and there's budgets. And certainly there's good principled reasons we should be thinking about this today. These are not usual times. And what's going on in our country is national, but it's also local. This impacts us. And that's where I'd like to talk just a little bit about budgets, because my district encompasses East Hill, College Town, and a good bit of the Cornell campus. And I was also fortunate enough last fall to teach a course up at Cornell, so I have some sense about the international nature of the classes up there. Over half of my students were from other countries. And this matters economically. All right, if you want to talk about principles, yes. If you want to talk about budgets, yes. This is the lifeblood of our community. Tompkins County is different, principally because we have educational institutions here, Ithaca College, Cornell, TC3, that make this a very vibrant place and make it an important place nationally, but also locally. This is money for us, and it makes such a difference that we have people from all over the world coming here, and that there's the free flow of the people and their ideas is critical. So if you care about your pocketbook, it matters on that level, too. I support the resolution. Thank you.
Anna?
One of the things that I had intended to do, I think it was Rob Brown from Enfield, said that we are distracted by this these efforts and that we should be putting our attention and our funds in other places. The one thing that I do want to speak to that specifically is that this is a local issue, and this does affect our budgets, our personnel, our focus, our efforts, and our public safety. So I do feel that this is very much a public issue that is local. So that is one thing that I think that we all really need to understand. And the other is to Enrique. Gracias por hablar con nosotros. Eso en realidad nos pone divididos. Entonces, por eso, gracias por llegar y hablar con nosotros. Necesitamos entender las culturas diferentes para unirnos todos. Okay. Gracias. I think that this is about human rights. And that we should celebrate the difference we have in cultures, and the more that we are together and the more that we learn about each other's cultures, the more that we understand humanity and the beauty that we all have to offer. So I was thanking Enrique for helping us see the beauty in our diversity. So thank you.
Martha Roberts.
Thank you, Mike, and my thanks also to Anna. And many others in the community who helped to work on this. I want to
congratulate Susan Malter for knowing anything about 12 generations going back. Where's Susan? She's still here. For even knowing that about your ancestors 12 generations ago. Like Carol, I can only go back as far as my grandparents. They came here escaping the pogroms in Latvia and Lithuania. I mean, escaping the pogroms, like the people escaping Syria and Sudan today. And they didn't have a choice. I suppose the choice was that some of their family members thought they'd be safer in Germany or Austria, and those people don't exist anymore. So this is personal. It's personal to the farmer I talked to yesterday, who's half their work crew they can't find, and they're really worried about how they're going to plant in the spring. And that person talked to a vintner who doesn't know how they're going to find people to tie the grapevines or pack the food that we eat. And there are very serious predictions that we will have a food shortage, a food crisis in this country within a year. And I can't remember who said it, but the Ella Diaz about the... you know, it's not that they don't want to hire Americans, U.S. citizens. They can't find them to do that work. And there's a culture of labor and respect for and admiration and love for the land that many immigrants bring here, and that's what feeds us. That's what's fed us for generations. So some folks, beware of what you wish for. I feel that it's very important. There's a line in here about being in this country does not in and of itself, being in this country without papers, without documentation doesn't in and of itself constitute a crime. I think it's very important to talk about that. This is in our law. There are civil penalties and there are criminal penalties. And when somebody says, "Oh, but they broke the law," well, you know, if you run a stop sign, you've broken a law. Nobody expects you to go to jail for that. There's a difference, and it's a legitimate and important difference in our codes and laws between civil and criminal issues. And I want to ask Jonathan Wood to talk about that for a minute, but I also want to go to an older law. What the Bible says about welcoming the stranger. Deuteronomy 10:19. You shall love the stranger, for you were once strangers in the land of Egypt. Leviticus 19:34. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. And it's not just because you were, but it's because we all are. Anybody who's not Native American, we all came from somewhere else. That's what it means to be American. So, Jonathan, if you wouldn't mind talking to us a little bit about that distinction between what it means to be here.
What I can tell you is...
Point your mic.
Sure. What I can tell you is the line that you're citing from our resolution comes from a Supreme Court case, the U.S. versus Arizona. In that case, the state of Arizona had established a lot of rules on immigration, which were much more, let's say, severe and sometimes inconsistent with the federal rules. and the federal government challenged that. And in essence, the court held that the state of Arizona can't create these much more restrictive rules because that's the federal government's role. But in that decision, they said that someone being in the country in and of itself, even if they're not supposed to be here, is not a crime. That doesn't mean that it's inconsistent with immigration law, but it is not a crime. So that's what the Supreme Court said, and as they said that, it's right by definition. So
thank you. And
that's the origin of that.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I just want to say, if anybody is not sure, and I think it's really important to give clear direction to our departments, our law enforcement personnel, et cetera. And that's really what this does, and I appreciate it, and especially in light of, if you haven't seen the news today, the Department of Homeland Security, the Trump administration, has come out with absolutely egregious expansion, vast expansion of the numbers of people that they plan to deport, expedited deportation, and I suppose we're going to pay for that because that's not going to be free either. So just wait. Thanks.
I have Peter Stein next. Then I've got myself, and I've got Anna. You want to come back again? Can we do Wilf before you?
Mr. Chair, don't forget me.
Oh, you're next. I'm sorry, Leslie.
All right. Make me act out up in here now. Mm-hmm. Trying to be nice.
I was trying to get them in the right order here. But you are next, Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to let the community members who were here speaking know I didn't just run out to you all. I've been doing double duty as we are dealing with the issue of mass incarceration. So at the State Theater, Don Porter is speaking right now on that issue. I'm a member of the Cornell MLK Commemorative Lecture Committee, and we invited Michelle Alexander to come. As a community, we have been diligently talking about and trying to figure out ways that we can help to address the issue of mass incarceration. So I ran over there to do my duty and run back here so that I don't miss this very important resolution. Extremely important to me, as to many of my colleagues, because I sit here, I would say, almost very recent immigrant, and know very well of family members, friends, who have been subjected to civil immigration detention, not because they have committed some crime per se. I have never been more afraid. No, I don't come from the Middle East, but I'm an immigrant. I spent almost 2 years with a colleague going back and forth to Buffalo to get her legal paperwork, although her children are American citizens. She was in fear. This sort of blanket thing, all might be seven countries, eight countries, whatever it is, the way things like this get implemented is blanket, and many people suffer. My own family, thousands of dollars later, for a lawyer to get my nephew out of Batavia, for standing on the sidewalk having a cigarette in the middle of the winter, and no one would give you back that money, and no one will apologize. This is the kind of thing that, you know, I feel fearful about. This past summer, my family and I traveled to my home for a vacation. I'm a natural citizen. The United States of America, the government, requested of me for the profession that I intended in entering that I relinquish
the citizenship to my home country and pledge to become a United States citizen in order for me to get the license I needed. Yet I sit here fearful for family members. And I was coming back into this country prior election. I can't imagine what it would have been post-election. And I got separated from my family, or what I was supposed to be, because all of a sudden there was a black line through my name. And they said, you go over there, the rest of you go through. And I said, well, that's my daughter and my husband. Well, no, we don't separate families, then you all got to go with her. So I try to find out, why is there a black line through my name? I haven't done anything wrong. An immigration officer said to me, your name is similar to someone who's on the list, so be lucky it's not you. I don't know how many Leslin, McBean, Clairborns there are in this world. But that was just sort of like, really? And that's just a Cliff Notes version of what I had to go through. I can't imagine what it would have been like for me now. You know, I laugh at it now, but it was the strangest experience. So this is extremely important. I do have to give Anna a lot of kudos, because the resolution I intended to bring was to say Tompkins County is a sanctuary county. Anna, in all her wisdom, decided we need much more than that. I'm a cut-to-the-chase person. Let's protect people. And did a lot of work, and so I do want to applaud her for bringing this. But I know that sitting here, how important it is for me, for family members, for friends who are sitting up right now in the detention center at Batavia. It's not 48 hours, people. It is way longer, and it's costly, and especially for families who don't have the money to be able to hire a lawyer to get their family member out. It is extremely costly. So I just want to put my heart on the table. I find myself these days talking a lot about my own life, and that's concerning to me, because I never know who's watching, who's looking, and what it would mean for me tomorrow. But I wanted to share, because this is real, and it's real for many of us. Thank you.
I'd like to point out that it's now 25 minutes of 8. We do need to do some other business tonight, and yet I know how concerned people are about this resolution, and the folks staying out there in the audience to hear what we're going to do, you know they care about it.
Mr. Chair, might I just also say a great big thank you to Colonel's President Rollins for the statement he put out, and for all the other universities and colleges who have been trying to support and protect and get their students and families back in.
It's in your folders.
So what I'd like to do is ask folks to be particularly short, if you can, from here on out. Peter Stein.
I'll be as short as I can, but I have a good grandparent story that I think you might enjoy. And I'll try to make it short and sweet.
Just one grandparent, right?
The one grandparent, okay. Yeah. I have one grandparent, my grandmother, who immigrated from, also Jewish, Russian Jewish, immigrated from Russia in, 1870, I think, 1865 or 1870, something like that. Came to the United States as a little girl with her family and settled in Brooklyn. And stayed there for a while until she grew up. And she decided after a while that she didn't like this. She didn't like it one single bit. She liked the idea of what she used to do, was to go do farming, a little farming in Russia, and they didn't have that in Brooklyn. And so she decided all on her own that she would return back to Russia and re-find the old place. So she came back there, and stayed there for a while. And then the fearful pogroms came, and she decided, no, she was going to come back to the United States. So she came back to the United States and joined her family and became a citizen. And then she got married. And then the next thing that happened is she lost her citizenship. Because at that time, if you were a woman citizen and you married a man who was not a citizen, you acquired his nationality, not your own. So my grandmother never voted. She was there for, she lived a very long time without voting. So there's a story that I think is probably unique. The reason I asked for the floor, I was inspired by the other little stories that I heard. I wasn't planning to say that, but I thought it was an interesting story. I would like to make a resolution, and the resolution I would like to move is to...
You want to move an amendment?
Yeah, I'm sorry, not a resolution, an amendment, excuse me. Is the one that... gets rid of line 18, the whereas that starts on line 18. Whereas the mere fact of being present in the United States without any authorization by itself does not constitute a crime. And I would like to move,
Second by Anna?
No, that is not friendly.
Is there a second for that amendment?
I didn't hear the amendment.
Dan Klein?
For the purposes of discussion, I'll second this.
All right, they moved and seconded the amendment. So we have discussion on the amendment. Anna, tell us. Or Peter, do you want to speak to it first?
I think I would like to talk about it, if possible.
Let's let Peter speak first, and then I'll come back to you, Anna.
I'm pretty happy with this resolution. I'm happy with the whole, paper as it is proposed, pretty much. But this one bothers me. It bothers me a little bit, and I'd like to explain why. The first place, it's an interesting resolution that we're talking about because it isn't one of the things that we usually do. Our resolutions, I think, there are two different kinds of resolutions we have. One is we actually do something. We say that we're going to change a road someplace. We give some money to someplace else. That's what resolutions generally are. The other kind of resolution that we pass are resolutions telling people what to do. We tell the governor what to do. We tell tell the legislature what to do. But those are the three things that we do and the two things that we generally do. This thing does not do either. It doesn't make a change, and it doesn't tell somebody else what to do. So I think this is a pretty unique resolution. So I'm wondering, in my own mind, why are we making a resolution that doesn't do either of the things that we usually do?
You mean a whereas statement?
What?
The whole resolution or the whereas statement?
No, I said the whole resolution. I'm not talking about the whereas statement. I'm talking about the whole resolution.
Let Peter finish, please.
And it seems to me that that what we are doing is telling people how we believe a just government works with relation to the people that live within this government. That's what we're doing. And we're suggesting that we ought to do things that it talks about, that those things are good and that they are should be done. Okay? But we're already doing them. And as I read it, and the other thing we could be doing is, you know, we're telling everybody else who's going to read this thing what we think the right thing to do is. The problem that I have is I believe that that line, whereas a mere fact of being present in the United States without authorization by itself does not constitute a crime. Now, I really don't know what the word a crime means, but I'm willing to accept that that statement is true. I've been told that that statement is true. But I think most people will not understand that that's what we're saying. Because I think the way that the word is not a crime is used has got a different context. And I'll give you an example. A couple of examples. One is that stealing candy from a baby is not a crime. That statement is true. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that we think that stealing candy from a baby is a good idea. Let me give you a more pertinent one. A statement that says that a drug company decides that to make additional money, they are going to increase by a factor of 10 the cost of having something that saves people lives, but will nonetheless end with people dying that wouldn't have died if they didn't do that. They make that statement, and it is not a crime. And what that, on the other hand, making that statement says the following, that says it may not be a crime, but this is not something that a decent person should do, any more than a decent person should not steal candy from a baby. I think that particular way of using the word something is not a crime is makes people believe that that's what we're saying. That is not what we're saying. I don't think that that's what we're saying. And I believe that many people will interpret that. I myself believe that it is not the right of a person who comes into this country with a visa that ends at a certain time and is supposed to leave the country at that time. I don't think that that person has the right to stay here forever. That's just personal. Now, I know a lot of people will disagree with me. But nonetheless, it seems to me that somehow we are telling people who might be reading us, might be reading this, that that's the way, that's what we think is the right thing to do. That I believe it is not the right thing to do to stay in and try to stay here forever. Therefore, I would like to take that line out. It doesn't affect anything, but nonetheless, I think that we may be making enemies by putting a line like that in who believe that we are saying that a person who gets a visa can stay here as long as he wants, much past the visa. So that's basically why I want to move this resolution.
All right. On Peter's amendment, I have Anna, Carol, Jim. 1 minute each. Anna?
It actually is what we are saying. The statement is exactly what we mean, and we're using it for a very specific reason. There's a tremendous amount of misinformation that is being used that was cited in the executive order that we are trying to address. And that misinformation is that anyone who is here illegally is a criminal. And therefore, it is extremely important to make this statement to clarify that that is, in fact, legally speaking, not the case. That is the incredible purpose and importance of this statement, because the mere act of being here undocumented in and of itself is not a crime, meaning it is not a misdemeanor, nor is it a felony. And we are talking about a civil infraction, the equivalent of the local, which would be a violation. Equivalent of a local would be like a traffic violation. So we're talking about a very different instance here. And the other thing that's really important is when you're talking about immigration law, they make a distinction between the act of entering into a country and the act of being in the country. So, for example, 45% of the people who come into this country come in who are undocumented, came legally with documentation, and are now undocumented. So that is a very important distinction that they make when they're evaluating the individual for deportation. The second piece that they're evaluating is their criminal record while they're here. And if there has been no criminal record and the simple act that they are here is the only issue at hand, then what they're evaluating, legally speaking, is the simple infraction or civil situation. So that is the distinction that we're making here. And during the Obama administration, there were a significant amount of deportations. They were trying to make the distinction between those who had a criminal background or who were evaluated on a criminal level. Here in this case, we are trying to make that distinction and educate people, because there is the assumption that if they are here undocumented, they are a criminal, and that is simply not true.
On the amendment, Carol, 1 minute.
Would you consider this a friendly change to your suggestion, Peter? I don't know whether I support it or not, but instead of striking it entirely, and Anna, you can tell me whether this would work for you, whereas the consequences of being present in the United States without authorization are determined by immigration policy rather than by other criminal statutes.
That would be okay.
Is that friendly to you, Peter?
Sure.
Is that friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
Okay, and then other people can comment on whether that works for them.
All right, so we've got a slightly different amendment.
Could you read it again?
Whereas the consequences of being present in the United States without authorization are determined by immigration policy rather than by other criminal statutes. Does that work for you?
That is not legally correct.
That's not legally correct. Is there a way that we can do what I'm trying to do so that at least accepted, it's at least clear?
I would like to just say that it is a quote that is taken out, this line, and I would like to ask if I had a co-author who is a lawyer who helped me write this resolution that I want to thank tremendously, Kathy Bergen, and she has something to say about this if we want clarification and avoid a long conversation.
So you're asking to have someone from the audience speak?
The co-author of the resolution.
What's the feeling? We generally don't do that. No. Jim Dennis is next on
Mike. Yeah, Mike, I'm going to do this in 10 seconds or less. I want to call the question on the resolution that Peter put on the floor
on the
that
amendment
has been
you're talking about.
Friendly amended.
All right, we have a motion.
A legal opinion first.
We have
from our lawyer.
The question has been called on the amendment to the motion.
Is there a second to it?
The resolution, excuse me. Is there a second to call the question, Peter? All right, all those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have four opposed. So we'll proceed to call the question on Peter's amendment as further amended by the friendly amendment that Carol Chalk.
Point of order. Is it appropriate to ask for our own legal opinion?
We got it. Jonathan said that earlier.
Well, he hasn't said
versus Carol. Arizona. He told us that that's the exact words he used.
The proper procedure is to move to the vote after the question has been called. All those in favor of Peter's amendment, please raise your hand. Those opposed? It's everybody else. That amendment fails. Now we're back to discussion on the main motion. Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. I'll try to be very brief. I was tempted to tell the story of my own family coming here because we all have those stories. That's kind of what makes this amazing country we are blessed to share so special because we all have individual stories. You know, my father's folks came here in the 1600s. I have no clue if they broke any laws after they arrived here, but I do know he was pretty poor and an indentured servant and probably had to scrape to get by and cut some corners. But he stayed here, and I'm here many, many years later. I am really, really thankful that this was brought forward. I'm thankful that we have a county where the overwhelming majority of people who come out on a cold night will speak in favor of being essentially just using whatever mechanics of local law enforcement in the most humane, positive kind of a way. I'm thankful for the two people in our community who stood up and spoke in opposition. That's one of what makes a democracy a good thing. And I'm also cognizant that, as several people have pointed out, this is a moving situation. It was just today that our president talked about an intent to use local law enforcement, to deputize local law enforcement to enforce the mechanisms of his immigration policy, and who knows what will come tomorrow. If this passes, and I'm pretty confident it will, it is not without risks, because we honestly don't know what is before us. We would have the capacity at some point to try to adjust. I would much, you know, like Leslin, and I would be happier if we just did a blanket declaration that we are going to be a sanctuary community, but that is not what this is. This is a very carefully constructed piece that tries to affirm what our best understanding of current policy, and that we intend, as best we can do it, to continue. And I will very strongly support this. Thank you.
I'd like to say that I will support this resolution as well. And someone said it's important that we restate things sometimes, even if it doesn't mean a change. And I don't think this is a change of what we've done for a long time. I'm proud to be a member of this legislature in Tompkins County. I call it the best county. We're probably in the best state, and we're certainly, in my view, in the best country. We look at the people that come here from other countries as a resource for us. They provide labor, they provide ideas, intellect, and diversity, and we need that. And in Tompkins County, we have that every day. They are so much a part of what we have here. I said a few weeks ago when I spoke at the annual message, I said, we don't build walls in Tompkins County. We open our hearts. This is an example of that. We want people to know that they are safe here. And if they call the police, we aren't going to do anything different than we've done. They aren't doing anything different than they've done for many, many years. We don't have deportation forces here. I just ask people, what happened before January 20th and after January 20th? I mean, I don't recall the society in disarray before January 20th, and now all of a sudden we have to start rounding people up. Even the idea of talking about bringing up some National Guard members to make them members of the immigration forces, I find that just unbelievable. New York State has been a home for refugees. I understand, I recently saw a report that during World War II, New York State had the only refugee facility for Jewish residents, for Jewish immigrants, most of whom, those immigrants were not allowed into the United States, who were refugees, and that was a pretty sad time in our country. I remember after Vietnam, when we had right around here people coming in from Southeast Asia, Laotians, Vietnamese, Cambodians that came in and assimilated into our community here. When the Bosnian War was going on, they came to Utica and settled. We have been that kind of a country. People, my ancestors, I'm sure, came through Ellis Island during the potato famine in Ireland. And they were welcome, and they found work here, and they contributed to our country. So this does not do anything different except puts Tompkins County on the map as saying we continue to be a welcoming, law-abiding county, and we do that for our people. Thank you. Anyone else who would like to speak before we go to a vote? Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
C.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes, 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 yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes. Leslie get 5 votes?
Yes.
Begin with the roll call, please.
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 2 noes.
The resolution is agreed to. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Dooley Kiefer?
Yes. I realize that we've been treated to a lot of good conversation and points made, and it's not usual in our minutes to have a level of detail of the sort that some of those comments deserve, but I would like to ask our staff, to the extent that they can, to try to include some of the variety of comments the public offered us and not just relegate them to something that is not an official record.
Duly noted. We're going to take a 10-minute break now. It's 8 o'clock. Come back at 8:10. All right, let's get going. We've got a lot to get through again tonight. We're up to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. Who do we have who would like to speak to us? Anybody hiding back in the corner?
Got ducks.
Oh, there's ducks. A new one from Common Council. After this, I've got to try to take a couple of resolutions for folks in the audience. Welcome.
Hi. I actually had comments, but I should have spoken during public comment instead of waiting till here. But I am glad you passed it, so thank you for doing so. My parents are refugees, so I appreciate it. I wish Mike Sigler was here so I could address his op-ed about multiculturalism. My parents, I feel like, are very much American, but also have a heritage that is important to me and to them, and that a lot of people get to enjoy when they go to Vietnamese restaurants or celebrate Lunar New Year. So Jim brought up a thing about Tom Reed. So Seth Murtaugh and I, who both serve on this council for the Second Ward, got to speak with Tom Reed when he dropped by his Ithaca office out of the blue at 10:30 one evening. And so we did ask him to hold a town hall, not just in Ithaca, you know, at Cornell at 7 a.m., but to downtown during a time that is accessible to a lot of people. He said he'd think about it. And he is planning to have a town hall in Tompkins County in the spring, April, maybe. So we'll see if he's open to actually doing it in the city. So George reported that we passed our own sanctuary city ordinance earlier. We also recently joined an amicus brief with A.G. Schneiderman suing the Trump administration with regard to the travel ban. McGuire came to the planning and Economic Development Committee meeting recently to talk about their future plans. We are contemplating selling them a portion of Southwest Park behind Walmart, which is a more suitable place for a car dealership. We're also using it for – there's a lot of plans for this land. Dredging spoils can go there. We may want to relocate DPW and potentially TCAT there. But it's a big plot. There are some wetlands, so it's difficult. But this may convince them to divest Carpenter Business Park for a more appropriate mixed-use project. Discuss dogs in Stewart Park. And there is another, so the temporary mandatory planned unit development is the legislation that allowed us to exert control over Carpenter Business Park, where McGuire was going to do their project. And so that same process, a developer is going through to build some apartments on Inlet Island. And so there is a public information hearing or session on February 27th at 5 p.m., second floor, City Hall. I think it's a fairly non-controversial project, certainly compared to McGuire, but something to, if you're interested in development in the city, something to take a look at. And I think that's it.
Questions? Will.
Doug, thank you for coming. And I saw the, you on the video of the sit-in at the congressman's office, whatever.
That's right. So I, just real quick, I brought up, you know, I asked him to show compassion towards sanctuary cities, and that we, our intent was not to break the law, but to create safer communities. He latched onto the part where I said, we're not going to break the law. He's like, I'm glad to hear it, and then didn't really respond to the rest of it. But,
Question about Southwest Park. Has the city completely abandoned the idea of housing down there?
I think so. So I wasn't around for that, but for those discussions, but I think the it was too expensive and too difficult to make it worthwhile.
Okay. I'm sorry. I live sort of just on the other side of that and walk the area. It's one of the most beautiful areas in terms of sense of openness and light and everything, and it would be a wonderful place to live as long as you didn't get flooded, which could be the problem. Maybe houseboats, I don't know, but it's like...
Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming over tonight and staying with us through our long meeting so far. We got some folks here, Rich, I think, for Resolution P. Do you want to take that up?
I'll definitely give us a chance.
I'll dig.
Mr. Chair, I would move Resolution P. Authorizing a $100,000 supplemental one-time appropriation to Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources, Inc. to expand its range of services to include housing for individuals released from incarceration at the Tompkins County Jail, pending Public Safety Committee action 2016-17 that did occur, and Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee action 2-21-17.
I have a second by Will Burbank. Discussion.
And if I might,
please.
This is something that's been a long-term project for OAR, and I'm very happy to be bringing it to the legislature. This is, I think, a key element of what we're trying to do in terms of examining our jail population and doing everything in our power to make sure we reduce the jail population to the extent we can. And one element of that is keeping people from going back. And right now, we do not have adequate resources for providing a pathway when people leave jail to land and to be able to get back on their feet. You know, this one house won't do it all, but it's certainly a step in the right direction, and it is part of the spectrum of services that we hope to build and to supplement the many things we've already done, but to build a better system overall. And so I fully support this resolution. So questions, comments?
Others who want to speak? Carol?
But I just need to ask, I should have asked before, I'm sorry, are you getting any development advice or LLC advice from anybody at INHS? I just need to recuse myself if you are.
Carol, you're asking
no,
Deborah.
No, not INHS.
From OAR.
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Will?
Deputy Deacher just walked to the phone, to the microphone. I was wondering if you wanted to just add a few words on this.
I'll be brief. I know you guys have been here an awful long time already, but I want to say how excited I am that it is at this point in front of the legislature that your support for the range of ATIs in this community has been deeply appreciated, and that you've heard that the lack of housing is one of the biggest impediments to people's sustained successful transition to the community. So thank you all for vetting this idea, for listening, for good suggestions on improving it. Thank you.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Deb, for your courage and leading your board to be able to move in this direction. I know it's been a long conversation. I also want to say it's we know that Finger Lakes Reuse and Tompkins Community Action are also working on similar kinds of projects. They're looking at bigger projects that take a long time and a lot of money to assemble and parcels and all that stuff. And it's really great that you stepped in a, you know, let's just get one house at a time, and really appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
Anna?
Just one thing, one piece that I appreciate in this that I want to just point out that you're trying to do. I know that there's not going to be someone there full time, but as far as a staff person, and you spoke to us about having sort of a community or, and I can't remember what you called it, but
resident
a resident advisor who's basically like an equivalent of the resident advisors at, you know, campus where we have a student who's an advising, and that you established that here with someone who'd worked through the community, who was already like maybe reestablishing themselves, and that kind of mentorship that creates that relationship of trust, I thought was such a key component of this, and I wanted to thank you for adding that in particular.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're ready to vote. This takes a short form roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Does anyone want to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thanks for hanging in there with us, Deb and everybody. I think there's some things on the consent agenda that will help at least one of our department heads back in the corner there. So are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Not seeing any. Let's go to the advisory board appointments. Let me dig down and find them here. Out of the Public Safety Committee, to the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Diane Bruns and Christopher Colossi. To the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Jason Leifer. To the Traffic Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Martha Robertson, Anna Kellis. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, to the Air Service Board, Gerald Hector. To the Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Dooley Kiefer. To the Health and Human Services Committee, out of Health and Human Services Committee, to the Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Alan Minsky, and to the Substance Abuse Subcommittee, Kathleen Marco Blair, out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Barbara S. Romano, Ian Golden, David Blake, Kenneth Jupiter, Ann Gossin, Michael Mellor, and Julie Swigert. And then we have some resolutions. If you want them off, just holler.
Point of order?
Yes.
The resolution for the Public Safety Committee, resolution number A, is it possible to substitute the resolution submitted by Legislator Kiefer?
Why don't you pull it off? Well, we just
off
pull it off consent. And we can do that when it comes up. So that was out of Public Safety Committee. That's off. Resolution B, out of the Health and Human Services Committee, Budget Adjustment, Youth Services, pending committee action. Resolution C.
Off.
You're pulling it off?
Yes, please.
Resolution C, acceptance of funds from the Park Foundation, Youth Services. Resolution D, authorization to increase funding from the Workforce Development Board, Agreement, Budget Adjustment, Youth Services. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution E, Award of Bid, CFR ARFF, Crash Fire Rescue, Airport Rescue, Firefighting, Building, Roof Repair, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution F, authorizing.
Off.
Resolution G, authorization to execute.
Off.
Oh, my goodness.
Resolution H, award of bid, operation of household hazardous
off.
Waste. Out of Government Operations Committee, approval of the 2017 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair. Out of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, resolution J, appointment of Climate Smart Communities Coordinator for Tompkins County. Resolution K, negative declaration for authorizing disbursement of the Community Housing Development Fund Award for Second Wind Cottages expansion. Resolution L, authorization to disperse county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund. And out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution M, the 2017 Strategic Tourism Implementation Program Budget Adjustment. Resolution N, award of first round of 2017 Strategic Tourism Implementation Funding. Resolution O, authorization.
Wait, I need L. Was L, did you already pull L off? I need to recuse myself from that one.
You want to pull L?
I just need to recuse myself. All right. If it can be listed that way.
We'll pull it off. Okay. So we have pulled resolutions A, B, F, G, H, L, and O. Is that correct? Okay. For the appointments and the rest of the resolutions, do I have a motion? Motion by Dave McKenna, seconded by Martha Robertson. All in favor of the consent agenda with those? Please raise your hand. Any opposed? Okay, so let's see. Still trying to get Amy out of here, if we can.
Which one? B.
B. B is out of Health and Human Services. Could you please move that one, Anna?
Yes, I'll move that.
That's the budget adjustment. Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. Who pulled that, Dooley?
I pulled it because I just wanted to vote no on this and explain why. And I didn't want to vote no on everything.
Go ahead.
So it's my belief that this position that's being funded should actually be in county administration. And I understand why it's been set up the way it has, but it does not result in the administrative hierarchy the way I think it should. So I want to vote no.
Anna?
I just wanted to respond to that directly and have it noted. And I think that actually this is a very creative solution. And, Joe, I wanted to thank you for that. There has been someone who has been building expertise in the Department of Youth Services for years, and if we had to hire someone else in the administrative office, we'd have to start from scratch. It would be very expensive. It would be very inefficient. Or we'd have the other option of moving that person over from Youth Services, but that's inappropriate given that that's where their main job is. So the creative solution was to temporarily remove half of that person's responsibilities, focus it exclusively on this work, add 50% time so that he could do this work, and then create a position part-time for 3 years in the interim, and after those 3 years, move the rest of his work back to his full-time position. I think that is exceptionally creative, and I want to applaud Joe for doing that and Amy for doing that. So it's not ideal, but it is, I think, very appropriate.
Anything else?
And I knew all of that, and I talked with Joe about it. So it's
ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? We have one opposed. That carries. Is there anyone else out in the audience waiting for anything? Or are we going to go back to the regular agenda? Okay, back to the regular agenda. Well, legislators, it's a privilege of the floor for you. It's now 8:30, so I would ask you to please bear that in mind. Will Burbank.
Very, very quickly.
you probably saw the news reports about the angry town hall meetings, and I think there's legitimate anger. But something very unusual happened here in Ithaca with the occupation of 3 days. Local Catholic workers basically sat in the office of Tom Reed, Congressman Reed, and his office reacted in a way that was essentially surprising. He said, okay, folks, you can stay as long as you want. And late on Friday night, the congressman appeared, and he sat down and had a very civil conversation with the folks that were there. There is a YouTube of it, and it's the kind of dialogue that I really wish we could be having all across the country. So I'm sorry that it took a sit-in to make it happen, but I hope it will be serve as an inspiration. So.
Anyone else? Martha Robertson.
Yeah, I would agree with that. At least he's had town hall meetings, and several members in our region have refused to even have town hall meetings. Thanks, Mike, for you put the Cortland Standard article in here about what the Groton Town Board did, and I you know, appreciate that we have this information. The Groton Town Board voted its disapproval of the resolution on public safety for all, but it...
There was also a letter that we received and was sent out to everybody.
Right, but the town board member, Randy Jackson, is quoted as saying, we're not trying to give pros or cons, we're just saying that we, the town board, don't like that the town can't vote. So, just wanted to recognize that.
All right, anyone else? Jim Dennis.
Yes. Duxton was here and he neglected to mention that ILPC passed on the development for the library after the seventh iteration of the plan. It was a close 4-3 vote. The other thing, the reason why no one has ever developed housing in Southwest Park, when I was on the city council, we did a study of that, and the city planning department had a grand plan to develop that all, and we had somebody who wanted to do it. But once we found out when you drill down 8 feet, you know, you strike water. And
houseboats,
and it got abandoned really quickly once that was learned. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, let's move on. As you all know, President Haynes from Tompkins-Cortland Community College was scheduled to give his State of the College address. We talked to him about the fact that we would likely have quite a number of folks here to speak on privilege of the floor, which we did. So he was graciously agreed to do that at our next meeting. And I think when that happens, we're going to all need to listen very carefully to what he has to tell us. I don't have any formal report tonight as chair's report, other than I will call your attention to the fact that there was a news article in the Journal today indicating that the Board of Trustees of Tompkins-Cortland Community College and their selection committee has narrowed the candidates for president of the college down to three, and there was a little brief summary of the three of them. All of them will be coming in to county for 2 days each, and there will be several different kinds of meetings that they'll be scheduled for. I haven't seen the firm list of them, but they were talking about having an opportunity at the two extension centers, one in Ithaca and one in Cortland, for community members, including legislators, to meet each of the candidates. Talking informally with members of the Board of Trustees of the college, I think they're quite impressed with the quality of the candidates that they have. We have one from New York State, we have one from Minnesota, and one from Indiana. So Joe could vouch for the one from Indiana.
Is it Indiana or Illinois?
You're right. It's the other I state.
I states.
I got confused. It's the first time I saw the names was tonight or today in the paper as well. Quite a different group of people. This is somebody who is likely to pick up the reins of the college and serve for I don't know whether it'll be a generation like Carl Haynes did, but at least probably for a decade or so. So it's a really important choice that's coming ahead here.
Mike?
Yes?
I read the Ithaca Journal article, and I was bemused by what I think the person reporting said, that they're not trying to duplicate Carl Haynes. And I didn't know what to make of that.
That was attributed to John Connors, the vice president and provost out there. And I think what he was trying to say is they weren't expecting to be able to duplicate Carl, but that they would expect a person to be his or her own president and take the college in a new direction, not different necessarily, but in a direction as he or she felt they should be moving in consultation with the Board of Trustees. So I don't think it was intended anything as – it was worded very awkwardly. I had to agree with you.
Well, I took Carol? That to mean that he was just truly irreplaceable. He's a treasure. So that's how I took
– You could have said that. That would have been nice.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on to reports. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Mike.
From Indiana.
I have a few items, although I have to tell you, they all feel very mundane after the first couple hours of this meeting. But just a couple of updates. The first item on my list, we were going to do the PowerPoint on the accomplishments. But after all these years working with you, I've learned to read my audience pretty well, and I think a 20-minute PowerPoint after a long meeting is probably not productive. So instead, I've given you a hard copy of the accomplishments list. You should go through it, because I think it will bring to light the things that the departments themselves feel pretty good about in terms of what they accomplished last year. Read it, because it looks a little funny if you try to read it like a book. It's upside down. But if you read it like this, pretend there are two staples at the top, it reads pretty well, and it won't affect your vision at all when you do it. So we will also post this in a couple of pages on the county's webpage. So you and the public will have an opportunity to look at it. And, again, I hope you do have a chance to do that. With respect to updates, the LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Initiative, we had a really good meeting last week. Rich and Peter were both there, a city-county meeting with some human service folks on our side, some law enforcement people on both sides, some agency representatives, and a fellow from Albany who was very much involved in setting up their LEAD program there, who offered us the clearest insights I think we've heard yet about how this can work. It was very helpful in terms of seeing how it can work in a city of that size. We're going to try to do a quick follow-up meeting. There are some major policy issues that need to get discussed and decided there, including the two primary ones are how long does law enforcement stay involved in a case? They stay with it through conclusion, or do they divert and then back away? And the second question is whether a case manager, a dedicated case manager, is needed for this basically hub and spoke operation where an individual is referred to various human service agencies. Do you need a full-time case manager? And if so, how does all that happen? Where does the money come from? So those two issues will be on the table when we next meet in the next few weeks. Shared services, the governor's plan for shared services. TCOG meets, I think it's this Thursday, and we'll be bringing the status of that to TCOG and asking for a committee to be formed to look at potential shared services. I think the eye will go quickly to back office type services. I hear a lot of towns and villages still talking about their desire to look into that, some kind of a centralized back office, either one service or multiple services that could be provided to towns and villages. So I think that's probably where the attention will go. It could be the police, the law enforcement shared services that we're working on now may be ready for prime time by that period of time when it needs to go to the ballot. I'm not so sure. So we'll be talking a lot more about that in the coming months. In the spirit of shared services, centralized arraignment, I talked to you about this last time. You know, it's a new law, a new opportunity for after-hours arraignments to be consolidated in a central place with a rotation of judges. We had an initial meeting to broach that idea with all the stakeholders and there's a follow-up meeting at the jail. The magistrates meet every year at the jail for a tour Saturday morning. So Matt Van Houten and Ken Lansing and I will be talking to the magistrates at that time about this notion to engage them. If they don't want to do it, it's not going to happen. So we need to work with magistrates on that. The last item on my update list relates to law enforcement shared services, the study that's underway. Study's continuing, a lot of data gathering and data crunching right now. But we did have a conference call today. Peter was involved in the call, as was Jim, with the consultants. And I want to just spend a minute talking about public engagement, because that's been a critical issue for the legislature. That's beginning to come into clear focus, and I think you'll like what you hear. We're now talking about an open meeting that would occur in early March, patterned very much after the meeting that Rich had with the Jail Study Committee, where the consultants can give an overview of what this is all about, the process, but then devote the meeting really for public input without boundaries on it, just open-ended public input. Have it in a large enough place to accommodate how many ever people want to come, and give it time for people to offer comments. So that's kind of the opening. That'll be the opening step. There will be a survey that will be provided to anybody who wants to take it, and we will ask you to help us get that survey into circulation. It'll be a Survey Monkey. It'll be on text. You can do it that way as well, and there will be hard copies. So we'll ask you for places that we can put the hard copies, and we will ask you to get this on your listservs and other things to get it out there and in circulation. That will happen in March as well. As this study goes forward, options will emerge. You know, what are some of the options we can look at? At that point, when the options are identified, and I'm sorry I missed a step. Go backward. Before the options are formed, the consultants want to form a couple of focus groups with a diverse array of individuals on those focus groups. Neighborhood association reps, community group reps, business reps, and so forth, who can participate in two focus groups to talk about the things they value in law enforcement services, what they'd like to see, and so forth. That'll be a very focused part of the public engagement. And then, as the study gets closer to the finish line, a few options will emerge, and at that time, three public meetings at that time to open it up and get public comment on those options. So as you recall, when this process began many months ago, we weren't talking about public engagement, and then we talked about one public meeting. So we've really moved a long way, and the consultants are pretty good about helping us think this through. Paul has been great, by the way, too, on our side. So I thought you would want to know about that, and we do want references from you on individuals who might be good participants in those focus groups that will come up in April. I'll send you an email to remind you what we're looking for and timelines and so forth. So that's my report.
Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, Joe. Can I go? Well, let me first on the public meeting in March.
Yep.
I was shocked to realize that March is next Wednesday. So, as warm as it's been, but still. So, is there going to be an effort to try to find
beat the bushes?
Good date?
Yeah. 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 It'll be the third or fourth week, I think, of March. So we will start revving up for that. We're looking, so you know, that the two venues that came up were the space mm-hmm. and even Culp Auditorium at the high school. Now, I don't know that there's going to be that many people who want to participate, but the thought was better to have a big room that can accommodate everybody than a small room that has to turn people away.
Okay. Just, to be, you know, love it if it's not a night when, say, we have a legislature meeting or something.
Right.
Okay. And on shared services, I've mentioned offhand, too, about code enforcement.
Yeah.
As something that might be a function that the county could assist with, take over, whatever. I did have a conversation about it with Jonathan, and it seems like perhaps the health and safety side of things rather than the building permits side of things might be more appropriate as a county function.
It's on, okay, and it is on the long list of things that I've circulated to. I've talked to Bill Goodman and to Irene Weiser. And it was a lot of it was bringing back some of the things that started to be talked about a couple of years ago. That was among them. So I know that's on the long list of things to look at.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Will?
In terms of space, it really is hard to anticipate how many people are. The downside of those venues is that we can't easily do a video. I mean, it could be brought in, but this space might be perfectly appropriate and it could be videoed and therefore archived and made available. So I'm sure your committee will figure this out.
Well, no, it's a really good point. In fact, somebody, I forget who it was, on the conversation today suggested that maybe we could figure out a way to get Jim Blizzard into wherever we go to video it.
No, it is doable. It's just
harder.
more of a deal.
Yeah.
Quick question. On the lead discussion, has there been any talk about doing that through the sheriffs at this point, or is the focus primarily the city?
Sheriff has participated in all these meetings. My sense is they're kind of coming up to that same sense of awareness about this program as everybody else. I think they're looking at it as something that is more applicable to in an urban environment, more dense kind of patrol areas, more opportunities for community policing. I think they're going to let the city launch first, and the idea of them coming in behind that. So
okay.
That
Thank you.
Seems to be the way the sheriff is approaching it. But he's been involved in all the, he and Brian both, in all the meetings.
Sure, Martha. Let's...
Yeah, we videoed for the housing summit. We videoed
right.
in both of those venues, and we live streamed from the space. It wasn't wonderful. It was sort of happened, but video was able to be set up for both.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Should we move on? Yes, Peter.
Joe, let me make up. Let me view a or say a concern that I have is that. I think there are, basically we're looking at drug crimes, okay? And there are a significant number of drug crimes that take place that are handled by the sheriff's office. And I think that as soon as it goes on the wire, okay, as soon as it starts, sheriff's office has to be intimately involved in doing exactly the same thing that's being done by the city. So I think you can't say, well, let the city do what it wants first and then we'll copy that or something like that. I think that our police ought to be intimately involved with that and not have to just copy what the city does. It's something I've tried to say several times, and it never seems to go anywhere. It seems that, in fact, the city is going to make all those protocols, and I don't think that's the right way to do it. I have a concern about
right.
that.
Okay, let's go to Jonathan Wood for County Attorney's report.
No report.
That was fast. Questions for Jonathan? I want to turn to Rick Snyder, but he's got to promise at least 30 seconds on the graduation of his son that he went to.
Oh, it was great. We went down to Georgia, and it's reminiscent of what I went through 4 years ago when I had another son go through the Marine Corps boot camp. But when they graduated, he had finished 16 or 17 weeks, and I thought that was quite long for boot camp. In the Army, and he explained to me that it wasn't just boot camp, but they went through their next level of training, which often is put off to later on. So we actually went through two camps, and we got to go to dinner and see a lot of family when we were down in Georgia. So he's graduated, and now he's stationed in Fort Stewart, just outside of Savannah, Georgia.
Thank you, Rick. We're all proud of him.
And I am, too. Tonight, I'd like to give a very...
I just want to say Rick Snyder is our director of finance for the folks at home.
Thank you. There's this one-page report I laid on your desk called the Contingency Account Report. I'd like to review it with you tonight. This is for 2016. As you're aware, there's a spot in your budget when you approve it each year that gives the legislature an account called contingency, which is for those projects or those tasks and those things that couldn't have been imagined or weren't thought of when you were putting your budget together. And so we, over many years' experience, Joe has come up with a formula to know approximately how much we need for these contingency items, these things that just happen to come up during the year. Now, sometimes you do know that there's something as you're putting your budget together that you want to include something specific, and so you'll add it to the contingency fund, and that might be done because you don't know exactly where to put it in the budget or if we're actually going to need it. But I thought I would review with you the 21 items or so. I'm not going to read them all off, but you can take this with you. Out of about $1 million in your contingency fund, we spent $680,000 as of the end of 2016. There may be a couple more contingency items because I have the authority from the legislature. If I, before closing the books, find that there are a couple of budget adjustments that are still out of whack, I still have the power or the authority vested from you to be able to use some more of these dollars to make sure that every account looks good before our audit begins. But I just thought I'd review that out of that $1 million or so, $680,000 was spent, the $296,000 was left as of the end of the year, which is much better than the previous year. You remember the whole contingency was gone in 2015 by the time we hit about September 1st. So some years you use more, some years you use less. You can scan those items on there. I know that you're going to be familiar with every one of them because every one of them was talked about and adopted as a resolution by the legislature. You have the purchase of body cameras. You have additional funding there for translation services, 5 electric vehicles at mental health. The probation's reentry plan was one of the biggest allotments. The jail population and trend study. All these things were talked about, debated, and passed by this legislature, and those were reductions from the contingency fund as we moved those monies into actual operations. So if you have any questions, I'll take it at this time.
Martha.
So I don't see jail board outs or jail medical. Is that because, as you said, these are things that we don't normally see? And things that
normally you would have seen one for jail board outs because in previous years the budget allotment was not enough, and we had to come back to, last year, I know, in 2015, at least twice to increase those costs. I think Joe was able to increase that quite a bit in the 2016 budget, although I'm not exactly sure how much that went up. But there was a bigger number in there to begin with for 2016. I still have to review that and some other accounts, and maybe they might need a little bit of a tweak at this point now or not. I'm not sure. But this is not the final list, but we're very close to ending the year. So I can let you know if there's any other appropriations past this date.
Right. No, I remember you took that action, and it was a big number that we voted on, and you were making a point that since this happens every year, we shouldn't just take it out of contingency. We should recognize it. So that's why we don't see it here at this point. Okay. Thanks.
Dooley.
I noticed the district attorney salary increase, that was a mandate on us, right? None of the others are mandates. Is that right?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks.
Carol?
No. Were these all the terminal pays, there are some of them come to us and some of them don't? This way, through contingency.
These are all the major ones. I think there's a policy in place that says for replacement pay, they have to be out at least 2 months, 2 or 3 months, and they have to suffer that cost, and then they can bring recurring costs for replacement pay, i.e. if somebody's out and they have to be replaced with another individual. That's what we call replacement pay. Terminal pay They usually are very good about bringing these to us, so I do believe that this is all of it. But many times, if there's a vacancy in a department and there is money available and they know that they don't need to come to the legislature to ask for additional funding, they won't. If they know that they can cover it with their own budget.
So who do I need to talk to think about a change in name for that? Every time I see these, I feel like the Terminator. And boy, now we put them all together, we look so heartless. Are you the right one?
It's a trickle-down effect. Okay. So if you tell Joe and me, we could probably mention a department head meeting. I think a lot of these departments use the same resolutions over and over and over again, and they share it with other departments. So if we get entrenched in some of our semantics, you know, it might be hard to break. But we can try if you can come up with a better.
I'll visit you, Joe. We can brainstorm termination.
Okay, thank you, Rick.
I'll be back.
That's short.
All right, let's go to standing committees. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Anna Kellis. Vice Chair.
Just up. We have not met since the last legislative meeting, but we are meeting tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail, if I recall correctly. Carol? This is Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Oh.
Yeah. Since Leslin is not here.
Thank you for covering. Old Library Committee, Jim mentioned that the Ithaca Landmarks Preservation Commission did approve the concept that had been presented, I guess the eighth variation of the old library reconstruction from the Travis Hyde Group. That now needs to come back to the old library committee to make sure that we feel that it complies with what we had asked in the RFP. And we are searching for a date. Carol or Kathy, I don't think so. We haven't quite got a date, but we're working on it. It's in March now. Martha?
So I think the next step is it goes to the city's planning board, right?
Right. Yeah, but we also need to look at it from our standpoint to make sure it's still okay.
I guess the question is, should it come here before it goes to the planning board or after?
It's been delayed more than 6 months, longer than we thought it would be. I think it ought to proceed simultaneously. If there's big changes that come about at the city again, we'll have another meeting. Public Safety Committee, Rich John.
Thank you. I guess I'd like to start by moving Resolution A, but I'd like to use the version suggested changes by Legislator Kiefer.
Is there a second? Second by Peter.
All right.
Discussion.
This is a resolution to attempt to send a message to New York State to help us with the costs that would accrue if they adopt the raising the age of criminal responsibility to 18 years of age. There's multiple impacts across several departments in the county that would amount to an unfunded mandate if they do not appropriately fund the costs, and that's what the resolution is about.
I have a question.
Peter?
I have a question. I've heard about this for many years now, this being done, and when I heard about it, it was always to be done at no cost to the local. Is that still what they're saying or not?
I don't believe so, Peter.
Uh-huh.
Welcome to the New York State Legislature.
Right. Well, I've seen that happen before also.
I believe in past years it did include reimbursement, and this year it
does
not.
Yeah, 100%. I remember that.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, Peter. Last year at NYSAC, for example, the group that had been working on this with the state legislation reported back that that was what was going to happen. But it never passed last year. So now here we are with something new. And guess what? Carol.
I attended Barbara Lifton's town hall meeting, one downtown here, last week, and she definitely highlighted this issue of unfunded mandates, which was good to hear. I mentioned to a few of you that she sort of mentioned in passing that it was curious that she hadn't heard yet from NYSAC, or the New York State Association of Towns, comments on the budget. Most of her focus was on the state budget. And then I walked into the legislature office here to NYSAC's brochure with its budget comments. So I assume that they will now be hearing on our behalf.
Okay.
But that and other issues.
Thank you. Go to Health and Human Services Committee. Anna Kellis is the chair.
Mike, I think we need to vote on it.
Oh, could I not vote? Could we not vote? Thank you. On the resolution, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Rich, for keeping me on track. Anything else for Rich?
I'd just say that we had a Public Safety Committee meeting last week and started a review of the programs that Public Safety is responsible for overseeing, and we started a discussion regarding priorities for 2017.
Dooley.
Among your list of possible to-dos, might you be revisiting the cost of telephone calls at the jail?
That was not on our list, but it certainly could be.
I think it's just a terrible practice, the way it is, and it's everywhere, but maybe we could be different.
We could certainly add that. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's try again to Health and Human Services Committee, Anna Kellis.
Well, it was a very dynamic meeting, considering that we did review the resolution that we spent so many hours on tonight. So I won't revisit that part of the meeting, except to thank all of the committee members for their insight. Each person, I think, contributed an exceptional amount of quality to what ultimately was brought. So thank you to all of you guys. One of the things that I did discuss previous to the meeting with all of the department heads, which they are in agreement with and some of them even looking forward to, is the idea that each of the departments will have an opportunity, one per month for the second half of the year, to present some of the programs of their department with the intention of being opening it up and making an effort to open it up to the community so that the community can start to get a sense of what services they receive as a county from the government. I think all of us at one point or another have experienced people not exactly sure what they get or what we do in the county, and I think that HHS does cover a significant amount of, you know, what we have in services, particularly, I guess, with respect to our budget. So they have met, or they're talking together about the idea of doing each year sort of a theme throughout the year, so that there is a story that goes through the entire year and people can see, for example, housing might be an issue for this year because it could support the work that Martha has been doing. With respect to how that affects the different departments. It might be another year that we do youth and how each department has a role to play in supporting health of youth. So the idea, again, is to really reach out to the community and start to create that collaboration and support. And I'll be working with each of them, and that will start in the second half of the year, and it will probably begin with presentations from Frank Krupa for the health department and mental health. So that we've already got in place. So that's one thing, and I'll let you all know when that schedule is in place. And the other thing that we did talk about was the idea of mobility as a service. We have a tremendous amount of different transportation services in the community that aren't necessarily fully coordinated. And there is a concept that is taking over like wildfire in Europe. And what it is that you have one agency that is the hub, and then you use a software platform where an individual could open the app. They could say what their route is that they want to go from A to B, and the app would give back to them all the different types of transportation that are available to them at that time for that particular ride. So it's something very coordinated. And the reason that it's very timely and why it was brought up in this instance is because Gadabout has recently received several $100,000 for an upgrade of their software system. And the idea is to evaluate whether or not this system, this technology, might be an appropriate technology for them and could be an effort to coordinate all of the different forms of transportation. It was brought forward by the Office of the Aging because that is a particular issue right now, is for people who would like to age in place, who are in rural parts of the community, not necessarily having a way to get to the resources they need, particularly the health-related resources. So it's very timely. It was a great presentation, a very short talk, and the idea was to send it next to the Transportation Committee. So I have some paperwork to hand to you, Mike, and that was the last thing that we discussed. March 20th is the next meeting at 4:30 in the Legislative Chambers.
Okay. Questions for Anna? Anna, I wondered, we've noted about the manure spill that's threatening Salmon Creek and Cuba Lake. Do you have any update on that for us?
I have not. I actually sent an email, but I will definitely send out an email as soon as I get further information. I know right now that they're saying to the people who are living at the point of entry into Cuba Lake should not drink the water enter into the water in that area, but that's the most update that we have. As far as treatment, Glenn, did you... Yeah. The other thing that Glenn is reminding me is that Bolton Point is fine, and that is not something that we should be worried about. So those are the only updates I have.
Thank you.
Mike?
Yes, Julie?
You mentioned the manure spill. We don't have any real CAFO problems in our county, but outside of our county, and we're downhill from the CAFOs in that county where the spill happened, it's a very serious risk to this county. And I don't know if there's a venue where our county can talk to those other counties directly about this ongoing problem. Do you have any suggestions?
Soil and water.
Jim, just a second. We've got some hands up. Jim, do you want to answer the question?
Dooley, that's what soil and water does. I mean, they're in the business of working with farmers and setting up situations where they can keep, you know, this will be the first time I've said this at a large meeting, manure in a safe way that doesn't flow into water. I mean, that's the whole purpose of much of what John and his people do, and go out and do that. And I'm frankly kind of surprised that it happened, given that Cuba County probably has their own soil and water operation. But, you know, I contacted John today, and, you know, he hadn't gotten back to me yet, but, you know, it's clearly something that whole operation is very aware of.
I was thinking more in terms of one county government to another county government. I know soil and water is supposed to help farmers do this right, but it obviously doesn't always happen.
Dan Klein.
I just mentioned that we did a lot of work in CAFOs in Danby, and we found out that if a property is in a ag district, as most farms are, that it's regulated by the state ag and market. So the county doesn't have much to say. The town doesn't have much to say.
Yes, Carol.
Just on another topic, if we're done with that one, I just wanted to add to what Anna said. The one thing that I would add is that Brian Robison was really incredible and patient with our committee, quite helpful. We had a lot of questions and a lot of iterations we went through, and he was, I just wanted to recognize him.
Yes.
Thank you. Should we move on? Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. I'm going to defer to Glenn as I was unable to attend the meeting for a meeting report.
Mm-hmm. F and I met on February 14th. Joe started off the meeting reporting that this was the first meeting that the individual departments were represented instead of divisions of public works. The new departments are airport, recycling and material management, facilities, and highway departments. This change came because of the change in the charter. Leo O'Reilly was there from recycling material management, and he presented a resolution for Clean Harbors Environmental. It's a five-year contract with one two-year extension for household hazardous waste facility operations in the amount of $129,000. This was a low bid of two. The next one was MX1, which I've never heard of. And that resolution's H, and it was pulled. We'll get right back to it. Do you want to do all three of them? Or?
Well, finish your report, and then we'll do the resolutions.
Jeff Smith was there, and he had, from Highway Division, he had two resolutions. One was the transfer of funds, the final payment for the Forest Home Bridge project. And Resolution G was a resolution of authorization for the contract to New York State DOT for reimbursements for the rights-of-ways of Kennington Road and Burns Road. Mike Hall was there from the airport, and he had two resolutions. Resolution F was pulled, but this is the first one authorized acceptance of revised stateway opportunities, airport revitalization for the New York State Department of Transportation. The original grant was for $349,670, and the new amount was for $250,000. This is for promotion and marketing for the airport. The other one was for $62,000 for the roof repair at the Crash Fire Rescue Airport Rescue Fighting Building. And, of course, we made two appointments. One was Gerald Hector, which Michael said this morning, Dooley Kiefer. So do you want to do the resolutions?
Yes. Well, let's see if there are any questions on the report before we do the resolutions. Okay, let's go to Resolution F.
Resolution number 6862, authorized acceptance of revised stateway opportunities for airport revitalization grant for the New York State Transportation to assist in marketing and promotion of the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter. Dooley, did you pull that?
Yes. I was in a pulling off the consent agenda frenzy. And
I noticed.
So Resolution F. The reason I wanted to pull it off was I was mystified by why the dollar amounts were reduced, and I couldn't find anyone to explain it to me until I called Mike Hall and talked with him about it, and it was an interesting story. And so I came up with what I hope is a polite way to modify your resolution to include the explanation for the reduction. So in, what is it, line 11, whereas the original grant in the amount of $39,670 was accepted by Resolution 108 on June 7, 2016, but the grant amount has been reduced to $250,000 due to some state-level lack of clarity as to legislative and executive jurisdictional authority. Therefore, we are now seeking approval, and then you go on with the lower amount. And that's the actual language. I hope you find it friendly. And not as part of the official language, I will tell you that what I understand that to mean is that the larger amount was assumed, I guess, by the governor that he thought he had authority over it. But the state Senate was used to having a history of earmarks, and they thought that this money was still in their control, and they had trouble agreeing on whose jurisdiction it was. But this is the agreement that they came up with.
Is that friendly?
That'll be fine.
Friendly to the seconder? All right. So are we ready to vote on Resolution F? Those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Let's go to G.
Authorization to execute right-of-way acquisition funding agreement with New York State DOT, Cottington Road Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road and King Road intersections. I'll make that motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion on this one, Dooley?
I pulled that off because, as the explanation said, this is a supplemental agreement, and I think the word supplemental is important to have in the title. So the revised title that I propose to you, Glenn, is Authorization to Execute Supplemental Agreement with New York State DOT Cottington Road Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road and East King Road Intersections, PIN 3753.24- Right-of-Way Acquisition Funding.
Is that friendly?
That'd be fine.
Friendly to the seconder? Okay. Shall we vote? Or Carol, you have a question.
Well, I just want to point out that this whole project of making that intersection safer was the result of one person who came in to F&I. They came to the committee one day a number of years ago. What?
Years ago.
It was years ago. And said, I use this intersection every day. I think it's unsafe. And our highway people looked at it, and they said, yes, indeed it is, and it's unsafe enough that we actually did something immediately. We did something more temporary to clear the field of view when you came up to that corner where you're on a hill, needing to then make a turn onto a road, Cottington Road, where cars are whizzing by faster than they probably should. And now we're doing something, a bigger deal that's taking more years. But it's just never doubt that one committed person can't make a difference. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. So,
are you ready
for
to
a
vote?
Small group.
Those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
The next one is resolution number H. Award of bid operations of Household Hazardous Waste Management Facility, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 6845. I'll make that motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave again. Dooley, what's the issue here?
Okay. I pulled that for a couple of reasons. In line 8, it wasn't that two RFs P's were received. It was two proposals were received. That's just it's slipped in there somehow. And the that should be followed by an additional whereas that says, whereas the bid from Clean Harbors, which is the present contractor, came in at $9,000 under estimate. I talked to Barbara Ekstrom today to make sure that it was the same contractor. And I think when we do have a continuation of a contractor, who doesn't charge us more than we think we should be charged, it's worth staying in the resolution. So those were my proposed changes, Glenn.
That'll be fine.
All right with the seconder? All right, ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else for Glenn?
No, but I have something.
Dave?
I attended the airport meeting this afternoon just prior to this one, and just a little update. Some of the things that they're looking at, one is the possibility of a park and fly, which means you can get your car serviced and other things done to it while you were, while you were out of town, basically. The other is they're looking at possibly pursuing routes to Chicago with either United Air or American, and to Detroit with Delta Airlines. One's problem area at the moment is they're going to have to start asking passengers to get there about 90 minutes early for the...
You cut out there, Dave.
I said they're going to have to ask passengers to get there about 90 minutes early for the 6, I think it's 6 a.m. flights that go out, which means they have to be there about 4:30 or 4:15. Apparently, it's just there's 3 flights that are leaving. There's quite a bit of congestion with just the one access route to the gates. So going through TSA is slowing things down. So that's a problem that they're working on. They're going to try to resolve. But in the meantime, probably passengers should get there early to help out with that situation. Another not so happy note: if we do not get the other grant from the state, we are going to end up having to finance a wider section there where TSA has their gate to split it, so there's 2 access routes into the gateway, and also put in the second.
You're saying if we don't get it?
If we do not get it, yeah. And also put in the second jet bridge, of course. That goes without saying, we already have that on order, but it'll have to be installed if we, if we don't do the airport expansion right away, we don't get that grant. So that's my update on what's going on there.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
Should we move on? Transportation Committee will meet on Monday at what, 10? Mm-hmm. Here. Hopefully we're going to be talking.
What time?
Sorry?
What time did you say?
10.
Yes.
10 a.m. here in Chambers. Hopefully we're going to be talking about the possibility of a field trip to DOT in Syracuse. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are meeting on Wednesday, March 1st, 3:30 here in these chambers. We'll be continuing discussion of several things that we've been talking about for a while. One is public Wi-Fi access in county buildings. Another is credit card acceptance for payments by the county. And then another is a possible partial tax abatement for developers of infrastructure in certain specific circumstances. We heard about this maybe 6 months ago, and we're going to hear about it a second time next week. That's my report.
Questions? Anna?
Can you give us just a few examples of what those projects are?
So as I understand it, if somebody understands it better than me, please chime in. If somebody were going to develop a parcel that was going to eventually have, let's say, 10 housing units on it, but they weren't going to build all those units right away, and they were going to need to put in driveway and sewer and water, that they wouldn't need to necessarily pay the full value, taxable value of those items right away because they weren't being utilized right away, that there'd be some kind of phase in. That's the best explanation I can give.
I think you're exactly right, Dan. I think what happens is you have a developer will develop a plot of land with a number of lots on it, and it takes a while to sell those lots, and yet they are assessed as a building lot as soon as they're subdivided, the map is filed, and so the assessment goes up, and sometimes the developer can't manage the taxes while they're waiting for lots to sell and be developed with houses.
Thank you.
Martha?
Yeah, Sue Costantini brought this to my attention, and that it had been discussed last year, but then because she's finding that means the carrying costs are just so high, it's just really hard to develop any kind of housing. It just adds, and it's a timing thing, but it's a big burden.
Thank you.
Any questions? Oh, sure.
I have a question on another matter. Can you just refresh my memory on whether we asked staff on the credit card thing to talk to us about the use of debit cards versus credit cards? And if not, I'll talk to you.
Well, everything about that topic is on the table. So, you know, we haven't made any decisions yet. I don't know, Rick, is there anything you want to throw in about debit cards at this moment, or is that in the future?
Be prepared to talk about it in committee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Let's go to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Martha Robertson chairs it.
Thank you. We haven't met as a committee since January 17th, since the last legislature meeting. We will meet March 2nd, and should we do that at 3 o'clock, as we kind of discussed earlier? Or do you want to get back to us later?
I need to get back to you.
Okay. Yeah. So please, committee members, stay tuned on the time, whether it's 3 or 3:30. I do have a resolution, a couple of things, but just quickly, just as a follow-up to the housing summit, we have pages and pages of evaluations that have been typed up and compiled, not typed by Megan McDonald, but compiled and organized by her. And the planning committee is going to be getting together next Wednesday to look through all that and kind of say, okay, well, what rises to the top and what kind of action steps do we want to take to follow up the housing summit? And, Joe, you wanted to talk about the retreat about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Bring it up.
Go ahead.
We are planning a department head legislative retreat for the latter part of March. You probably have a better handle on the date than I do. Mm-hmm. Topic will be housing and how a county, this county, can become more involved in addressing the housing crisis in the county. And the planning department is working on that. They've involved some other department heads, including Jay Franklin. Martha's been involved in the planning. So we're hoping for something the latter part of March.
Right. Karen Barrett and Lisa Holmes were involved in the planning. Did we send out a doodle poll?
I think it's going to be March 30th, but it's not yet confirmed.
Okay. All right. Couldn't remember what happened. All right. Good. Thanks very much. So then I have resolution R6822, authorizing a contract with the Tompkins County Soil and Water District to provide interim financial assistance to support grant-funded conservation efforts throughout the county. So move.
Seconded by Dooley.
Which one?
Any discussion on that one?
I'm sorry, which one was this? R. What's the number?
R.
Okay, thank you.
Needs a short form roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Anyone want to be recorded as a no vote? That's unanimous. Martha, I think you have L too.
Did that get pulled? No, I thought that was on consent.
I pulled it off because I have to recuse myself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Put it away.
Authorization to disperse county funds to the Community Housing Development Fund. So that's document 6833.
So Carol, you want?
I just need to. Oh, no, I can't second it. I need to recuse myself. Did I get a second?
Seconded by Dooley.
Sorry.
All right. You may recuse yourself. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, and one recusal, one abstention. Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you, Mike. We have a meeting second Monday in March, and I have a pulled reso authorization to participate in various contracts let by any government entity of the United States of America, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn.
And ask why it was pulled.
Do we?
I pulled it because I wanted to ask a question and be assured of the answer before I had to vote on it. I know it's kind of a boilerplate resolution, but I also can conceive of there being entities whose contracts we might consider piggybacking on, but their way of decision-making may reinforce things we don't believe in. I think of some businesses, large businesses, that discriminate against gay people. There are all sorts of possibilities. And the way this always reads is as though cost would be the only criterion, and I'd like us to be assured that there are other criteria that we consider. And that's why I pulled it off, and I'm sure Rick can assure us of that, but I wanted to make sure.
Rick, you want to respond?
Rick?
I did speak with Dooley a little bit on this, and we have a redraft of the procurement policy scheduled for sometime later this year, we hope, as time avails itself. One of the new parts of that is what Joe and I have been looking at, best value governance or best value type of purchasing. And we haven't yet come to a conclusion on how that's going to be part of our procurement policy, but other counties have done it, and we're looking into doing it. But we have to get it past a few more stages before it's ready for prime time, and I'd like to bring that back as part of the overall procurement policy. One of the things that Dooley was talking about was women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, and a lot of the things that we already have part of our purchasing and procurement policies to start with. So, of course, this very narrow resolution doesn't include any of that. Doesn't talk about when we might want to do our own bids and not piggyback. We don't have to piggyback. I mean, if we want to look at a whole myriad of solutions and reasons for not piggybacking a bid, we can certainly do our own bids and RFPs, and that would probably answer most of Dooley's concern. But as we get into this best value approach, and some of you may know of it, and some of you may not know anything about it at all, but we'll try to bring you up to speed on it as we unveil it. And what that says briefly is if you have a best value approach, you're no longer a government that just relies upon low bid. It kind of includes that as one of your primary concerns, but it's not the only gauge as to what you as legislators will use to award a bid. You use best value, and best value can be a lot of different things. It can be the quality of the product, the type of the building that you want to build, the type of the equipment that you want to buy. So it's not just low bid, and we're trying to draft some language so that we can bring you a procurement policy that includes that. Is it a little bit more difficult to administrate? Yeah. And is there some a level where it's not exactly objective, it's more subjective if you're looking at something like, well, you know what it's like if you've ever tried to buy carpet for your church or something like that. Everybody has a different color of green, you know, that's supposed to be the best color of green. And when we look at best value, sometimes there's some subjectivity, but you have to build a matrix so that you begin to evaluate all these different qualities. And hopefully the best value approach for some of our bids and the idea that we don't actually have to rely on another government's bid if we want to look into some of these other concerns, we can also do that.
Okay, thank you. Carol.
Yeah, if Dooley hadn't pulled this, I was going to, because I have some concern that I don't think it was your intent to say that something that would normally come to the legislature with other kinds of discussions, they wouldn't still come to us. But in fact, I thought that that's really what this says. This, we were giving blanket approval, or could be interpreted in the future as blanket approval for things that where we'd otherwise talk about a contract. So I came with some wording that I hope would be friendly. So at the end of that first resolved, after that comma, we would say, except that if county legislature approval is usually sought regarding additional aspects of the contract, it will still come to the legislature.
No, that is not.
Wait a minute. Carol has the floor.
Yeah, all right.
So that's not a friendly amendment. Do you want to move the amendment,
yes,
Carol?
Yes, I am moving it.
Is there a second for that language to be added?
Would you read it again?
Yes, I'll read it again. At the end of the first resolve, we would add, so that resolve talks about, it gives this sort of authorization to exercise an option to participate in any bit of the United States government or its agencies, any state or any other county or political subdivision or district, for materials, equipment, supplies, or contract services as authorized by General Municipal Law Section 103. And I thought that was quite a blanket statement for us to just conceding.
You've moved that amendment.
That's what it reads now. And I would add at the end of that, except that if county legislature approval is usually sought regarding additional aspects of the contract, it will still come to the legislature. As if I might speak to it, it doesn't change.
We have to get a second here.
All right,
Seconded by Dooley.
My aim is that it doesn't change our ability to come to piggyback on contracts. If there's some other reason that we would normally be discussing the contract, that it will still come to us.
I don't understand. Maybe Rick could speak to it, but this is about procurement, and we also already have procedures about what happens when there's a bid. And whether we proceed with it, it has to be under our regular procedures. And sometimes they have to come back on a bid to the committee for approval. It all depends on what the committee wants to do. Is that right, Rick?
Yeah, it doesn't circumvent any of the other normal bidding requirements or policies that are in place.
Let me get Jim.
Jonathan. Sorry, but I view this as, let's say we're buying 5 electric cars and Onondaga County's buying 10 and they're the same cars, and then we can partner with them and do this and not have to, you know, do our own bit. That's what I've always viewed this as. Jonathan, am I completely off base?
No, the law says that if you want to piggyback off of other bids, like federal government, you have to pass a resolution saying that you're authorized to do so.
Right.
And all this resolution says is that we're authorized to
do so. Okay. And that's what I've always thought.
We're still on Carol's amendment. Do you want to
speak? Yeah, so using your example, my concern is, let's say they weren't electric cars. Let's say they were gasoline cars.
Carol, have the floor.
You finish. Let's say they were gasoline cars, and in the interim, we had passed a policy saying that we were only going to buy electric cars. If we actually had passed a policy, then this blanket resolution says we've authorized them to just decide and not necessarily follow other policies that are on the book. So that's my concern, that we just state that, and maybe the right place for it is at the very end, after the authorized to execute required contract documents. But I have concerns that we're doing more than we intend with this.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment as proposed? All those in favor, please raise your hand. One. Those opposed? Everybody else. That fails. We're back to the resolution. Ready to vote on the resolution? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Carol is opposed to that.
I promised you last month that I would talk a little bit about the IDA. I was reminded by the vice chair of the IDA that I should do that, and I will do that. And the vice chair is Martha. So there are a couple things that are coming up that are important. One, is the computing center is going to do a project up near the airport, and the only thing I can tell you, it is probably the greenest project I've ever seen that would come to the IDA. It does not go without noting that Larry Baum used to be on the IDA, but he is no longer, and he's no longer involved with the computing center, and Mary Stassi is. They've brought a project to the IDA to look at and possibly do an abatement on, which is most it's amazing what they want to do in their space up there. And, you know, stay tuned. We have not, we're having a public hearing on Monday, March 6th, I believe. And, you know, stay tuned. It's a very interesting project. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the IDA, with the help of Heather and people in TCAD, we're trying to develop a solar policy that can fit towns who are now being inundated with the Delaware solar, you name it, solar, coming in and saying, we want to put a farm in your area. And we have learned, Martha and I attended a public hearing out in Newfield a week or so ago, that towns are a little bit behind the curve in dealing with a pilot agreement. We have much more experience in doing that. So what we really heard was we need to put together a meeting, an informational meeting, bring some town officials in or anybody who wants to come, and we can talk to them about our solar policy, the one we're trying to do moving forward. And I think the IDA is kind of, we're moving ahead of the curve than any other IDA in the state right now, because we have people who want to do things here. And frankly, they're just developers. They happen to be developing things that we all like, renewables, but they still have to come through us. It's best to come through us rather than go to the town, because we can give a longer abatement than any town can. They can only do 15 years. We can do 20. So they're kind of learning what the process is. So we hope to educate some of the town board members, interested people in towns, about the policy. And, you know, we'll be moving ahead with that and hopefully adopt a policy that can work in the county for the future. And that would be my abbreviated IDA report.
Carol?
Jim, are you talking about being able to give abatements to these large developers pilots, but not to Mike Sigler for the panels on his house?
No, it's a private home, and they're paying for it themselves. No.
Dooley?
We're not able to do that under IDA.
There are other environmental groups who are concerned about solar policy, solar development. Right. How comprehensive is what you're talking about? Will you talk about not just prime ag land, but also the way to keep weeds from growing up around and under the panels?
Sheep is the answer.
Well, sheep is the answer, except it isn't for certain developers.
Dooley, I understand that. And yes, we are going to put together a meeting, and then we will have people there who are potential solar farm developers. And the conversation will probably lead in the direction you're talking about. We're not putting ourselves up as experts in building solar farms, but we are putting ourselves up in experts at being able to apply a pilot agreement to a project. As a town operates, let's say the town of Enfield gets a solar panel, it's up to their people, their code people, to take a look at all of that and make those kind of determinations. And hopefully we're going to remind those people that's going to be their job. And that's why we're calling together town people. Rather than impose a pilot agreement on somebody, and, you know, what the noise we've heard back is, you know, you're taking away our ability to negotiate a pilot agreement with a local developer. Well, we're really not. We're going to get you a better deal than you're going to be able to get yourself.
Martha.
And the private renewable systems are tax exempt. Mike Sigler's is tax exempt. There's no property tax. We don't. None of the. What?
I don't think that's true. I think
we have an exemption.
It's true.
Didn't we hear Jay say that that he doesn't ascribe any value currently to having put solar panels on your roof?
When we talked about this, that was one of the things he said about it. But nevertheless, we have the exemption. And when we first adopted the exemption, it was very early in people putting solar on, and he hadn't seen any houses sell that had PV on top. Because if you're going to put solar panels on, you're probably not planning to sell really soon. You know, it's like it's an extended payback. So it's only now, you know, maybe 10 years before, since people have been have been adopting solar. So he hadn't seen any increase in value, any change in value, because there hadn't been any sales with PV on the houses.
That would certainly be an interesting thing to look at.
We've adopted the exemption. And I think you'll remember we had back and forth about this, because the exemption applies to commercial. By state law, we have to either adopt it for all PV and wind facilities or none. And I'm gonna keep talking, okay? So why don't you listen all the way? So we have to adopt all or none. Each jurisdiction can opt in or not. So the town of Newfield did not. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. So so the town certainly can negotiate a pilot, but as Jim said, legally they're only allowed to go into an agreement for up to 15 years. The IDA legally has the authority to go to 20, and the developers are going to, we're not talking about the community developers like Cornell wants to put 2 megs here so they can use them. We're talking about the people in Delaware who say, where's going to be a good place to put solar? So they're going to look for a place that is relatively easy, for an organization that's you know, going to make it work and be standard throughout a county. And we think that if we get this kind of system set up, then PV will come, as opposed to when towns say we can negotiate a better deal. We don't think developers are going to go to those places because it's so idiosyncratic, and they'd rather know what the lay of the land is. So I don't know if I've kind of...
Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Martha. And the thing is that under 47... they can get 15 years. Under ours, they can get 20. And we looked at, and Heather looked at, the financials on one of these projects that we had and before us, and it was pretty clear if they had adopted this one pilot that they would have been out of business by about year 7. And, you know, that's not what we really want to do. We want to help keep people in business, and then still the taxing jurisdiction is going to end up with a piece of land that they were getting $1,000 on. Now they're going to get more eventually, and, you know, the life of the project is roughly 20 years. I kind of liken this to, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, it's when gas drillers came into the county and started going up to my 100-acre property and said, look, Jim, we can do this, and we're going to fix you up, and you're going to make a lot of money. That's what's going on with solar farms. And, you know, people want to go in. They see open land, and they see it as an opportunity to make money. They have investors who want to be involved in that. And it's a blooming business, you know. I mean, we have to be ready to deal with that in the county.
I'd like to move on. We've got one more standing committee to talk about. Carol, quick.
Well, yes. No, I'm all for us looking at ways to incentivize solar and wind, I don't think, I'll take some exception to that last thing you said, which is it's not the same as gas drillers coming in, because you can take down solar panels and your field is still there and it's unpolluted. I just want to be careful as we do it. I believe in providing exemptions. I just want to be careful that as we do it, that we're not giving advantages to the large out-of-town developers that we're not also giving to our local and regional businesses. And if it can't be the single-family houses, that it be that we think carefully about where the cutoff is.
We will certainly do that.
Thanks for that report, Jim. That's interesting to have you bring that to us. Let's go to the Jail Study Committee. Rich John is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. The Jail Study Committee met last week, and we had, I would say, two items of interest. Earlier, we'd had reports from various treatment providers, and one of them was unavailable. So Angela Sullivan from the Tompkins County Drug and Alcohol Council came and visited with us, and she gave some comment just generally about treatment and how that might work or not work at the jail. But she also spoke about the project she's working on with New York State to get approval for a detox facility here in Tompkins County, which earlier I talked about the OAR project being a very nice addition to the other pieces of our puzzle for the criminal justice system. A detox center would be a significant benefit on many different levels if it can actually happen. So it was pretty exciting that she was able to come in and tell us that it's moving forward. I asked her for some sort of timeline when she thought this might actually go, and it's difficult because it really is dependent on state approvals that you just have to wait for. We also had a visit with our new district attorney, who spoke with us about various items, including his thinking about bail, and particularly release on recognizance and release under supervision, which are, sound like pretty down-in-the-weeds stuff, but in terms of trying to move the county forward and certainly move it in the direction of the recommendations from the Court Consolidation Committee. Was that the right title?
The Court's Task Force.
Court's Task Force. This was a significant announcement from our district attorney, and also I think a very positive one, the idea being that as a default position on nonviolent crimes up to a certain level, the DA's office would generally agree to ROR, release on recognizance, or release under supervision. He also commented that the addition of a detox facility would be a significant benefit to the community. We'll be meeting on the 16th, and I just note that the Jail Study Committee meets immediately after the Public Safety Committee meeting, so if you're trying to get a heavy hit on those two topics, you can get them as a double header.
Will Burbank.
Thanks, Rich. Rich, do you get a sense that the DA's position represented a shift in policy? Or just a continuation of what they've
been. Well, certainly it was good to hear it from him, but one of the issues in the campaign that I heard was that individual assistant district attorneys were sort of setting their own policy, and this sounded like more like there was a uniform policy coming from the district attorney that would apply to all of the assistants. And certainly in my own experience as a defense attorney and in my short time as a prosecutor, it really does depend on the judge or justice, but some courts rely very heavily on the recommendation from the assistant district attorney. So this would be, yeah.
Martha?
Yeah, I heard him say that they're not, the DA is not represented at arraignment. So often the judges just, they use their own whatever their own guidelines are. So that for him to kind of say this as a general matter, that would be his stance. It's not that they show up at arraignment and that they're going to make an argument for this or that. but that he's going to communicate. Maybe in this conversation that you have with them about with the magistrates, that he'll communicate as a general matter. This is, you know, you justices should know this is our position.
Certainly, another job for the jail study committee is to try to arrange to meet with judges, and this would be a key element of that conversation.
Thank you, Rich. Can we take the minutes? Someone want to move them? Dan, seconded by Martha.
I have a question. Kathy, did you hear back from Katie or Ed about that? On page 81 and 2 is the description of the report from Katie Borgella and Ed Marks about the Public Service Commission and NYSEG and the West Dryden Pipeline in Lansing. And I started to make some changes, and then I thought that wasn't right, and I sent it a copy to Ed and Katie, and I let Kathy know that I would hope that they would take a look at it. It's kind of an important report that the public may be looking at, so I just wanted to make sure that they were okay with the language rather than my fussing with it. So,
is there something wrong with what's reported in the minutes?
Well, for one thing, I would say on page 81, the second paragraph there, Ms. Borgella, thank the legislature for its leadership in creating this task force. I would simply say the Energy and Economic Development Task Force, because it wasn't identified before that. But then on the next page, I started to add some more detail.
Well, I think the proper way to do that is to submit a correction or changes, which gets added to the notes. Is the way the policy reads.
So I guess, even though I seconded it, I guess I would move to table this till the next meeting so that we can get the input from the people who actually gave the report.
We have a motion to postpone the minutes approval until our next meeting. Is there a second for the postponement motion? Seconded by Dooley. Discussion? Dan?
Isn't amending a neater process than that? We can amend the minutes at another meeting.
Well, it could be.
We can move to reconsider them at the next meeting.
All those in favor of postponing? Rich, you have a question?
Just if you could clarify for me. I thought that the process you described was the result of a fairly long discussion before I was on the legislature.
That's true.
Do we not want to follow that procedure?
I think that would be the proper way to do it, unless there's something manifestly wrong with the minutes. Martha?
Well, the issue is you have here a page and a half description of what was said. And I think from the public's interest, they would really like to know, they talked about that, then I want going to go there and see what was said. So, for example, the seconded bullet section, I'll just give an example on why I hesitated after I made this comment to myself. The second part of the recommendation was to ask to be a model for PSC and NYSEG to find creative ways to reduce use of natural gas in order to free up supply for industrial uses. So that's a meaningful change in the tone, change in the content that I'm confident they said, but I don't want to put words in Katie or Ed's mouth. That's why I just said, and I think there's a public interest in getting this correct and from the speaker's point of view.
On the motion to postpone the minutes till the next meeting, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3. But keep them up. I think more people came later. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Those opposed. Just me.
I think we postpone
them to the next meeting.
I appreciate that. With the holiday, I think we would have gotten it done yesterday except for the holiday.
Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn? by Anna, seconded by Dave. All in favor of adjournment? Opposed? That carries. Thank you.